aboard, you people. It is a starship. Rokan Joe with Anna DeBlancis up for another day of broadcast insolence.
Yes. How was the day at the White Sox last night?
Oh, my God. It was so much fun out there last night.
Yeah?
There was so many good things happening. It's just a fun night at the old ballpark.
Yeah, and how did our boy do?
He was good. He didn't give. He only pitched for two innings because there was then a rain delay, long rain delay. So
there was one rain cloud in the whole Chicago area, and it settled right there.
True.
Over
I
the
looked
ballpark.
At the radar. It's really true.
That it was true. I'm like, it didn't rain by me, and I'm like a mile away.
It was like the baseball gods wanted to protect him. So
they did he live up to expectations?
Sure.
For two innings.
Sure.
Yeah, he shows why he belongs.
Yeah,
he's
going to
be the major for a long time as long as he stays healthy.
Three strikeouts, no walks.
Four strikeouts.
29 straight innings without a walk. He's something. He's something special.
I saw the kiddos lined up to get his autograph. He's already a superstar.
Yeah, people had Kopech jerseys last night at the park.
Woo.
It's really something.
All right.
But if people were interested in that right now, they'd be listening to WGN Radio 720 AM. Let's talk to Ben Bradley right now, the WGN TV CLTV newsroom.
Because we know a lot of people are interested in that.
Yeah. Well,
that for sure.
That maybe. It gives. I'm just playing the odds here, Ben.
We're trying.
Valid point. Yeah. You know, it's kind of like when the Blackhawks were, you know, in the run and the games would go, you know, to well past 10 o'clock. We're like, well, it's the Stanley Cup championship. How do we not lead the newscast with it? And they're like, the Hawks game is out on their channel. Anyone who actually cares will be watching the game.
Yeah,
act like it's not happening.
True. All right. Now, what is going on though on the CLTV? Oh, the people should be watching that if they were interested in this, too. The idea of Pendleton murder trial, I don't mean to laugh about this, it's a really tragic Chicago story, but the idea of Pendleton murder trial is going on right now. And you're able to see, I think the most fascinating thing about this is you're able to see how a murder trial in Cook County goes.
And it's nothing like Law and Order or any of the other TV dramas, is it?
Well, technically... You know, obviously, America was riveted, those of us old enough now, were riveted to the O.J. Simpson trial in the 1990s.
But even that was not quite what a murder trial
is. No.
Certainly not in Cook County.
Right. In Cook County, a murder trial is about a week, 10 days, maybe. Sometimes they're 2 days. And there's this one, because the cameras are on it, this is one of the things that judges were always afraid of with cameras in the courtroom, is that people know when they're on camera, they're going to behave differently, or they're going to answer, the lawyers are going to put more people up. And remember, in the O.J. Simpson trial, people became instant celebrities from that trial. I mean, gigantic. It was the last...
The dancing news, Itos?
That, right, the last news event that was... A universal tune-in on basically one channel because everybody was carrying it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it launched careers of people who are still on TV as analysts today and have their own shows.
Did it launch Court TV or was Court TV before?
Court TV was before that. I worked for Court TV during that. Court TV was
which is ironic considering you don't have a law degree, but you do
only one
on
only
the
person
on
ever TV. To anchor a Court TV branded show that does not have a law degree. Ooh. I would like to point that out. I think that gives me an accomplishment of some sort. So the Court TV was around, but it made Court TV, and it made, you know, we made Nancy Grace. It was my fault.
So it's your fault.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, Roe.
Oh, you should hear Roe's version of it. Oh, my gosh.
Ben, here's the problem with you, Ben. See, what Ben is, he's a tot dad. He's a tot dad.
Uh-huh. I'm a who?
Tot dad.
Not a tot mom, you're a tot dad.
Tot dad.
Tot dad. You are a father to a bunch of children, and I don't know if you're paying enough attention to it.
You're a tad hot, too.
Oh, God, is he? She? Is she? A handful, my friends. She's exactly as anticipated.
But it worked.
Did you also play a role in creating Glenn Beck?
No, I was on Glenn Beck's CNN show.
Okay.
I was his. I was his fill-in, and they wanted me to be. They wanted him to be Jon Stewart, and me to be Stephen Colbert.
Oh, that's
and that didn't work out for either of us.
Was he as nice in person as he is on the air?
Well, he was. He's actually not a bad guy.
CNN days were. He was manageable.
Okay, can I tell you a little story about that?
Yeah. Sure.
Since we're on the internet, I can tell you this now.
Wait, can we swear?
I would tell you,
we're on the internet.
If you want to ruin your career, sure, go ahead. We're going to see if we can get Skilling to swear in a few minutes.
Good golly!
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my God, Tom. There was a... So I was on his show on CNN for 9 months. And he was, I think he was only on the air 2 years before he moved over to Fox.
I can't remember. I only exactly recall him from Fox. I don't even remember him from CNN.
So CNN Headline News had his own show.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was working doing CNN analysis, you know, like they had me come on Larry King or whatever back then, and I would, you know, opine about something. And they brought me in to be his, you know, like his counter.
Mm-hmm.
And I would do it from here because they were shooting in New York. And they would shoot during the day. It was on at night. It was like 7 o'clock at night. But they would shoot the show at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon or 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And the times I could do it, I would be on, and I would do it from the Tribune Tower.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple of weeks, I went, or actually that summer, I spent 2 months in New York doing the show with him, and then doing the radio show on satellite back to here. I was piloting a show, which, you know, I killed more pilots than a Malaysian mechanic. There was this moment where at the end of the summer into the fall, there was a story about, and he was all crazy about like the caliphate, right? Mm-hmm. And about mm-hmm. Muslims, and he was one of the first guys to go
right.
to
defend
go
those
kind
groups.
Of yeah to get kind of goofy about all that. And so I said, you know, what's interesting, because this was in 2005 or six. Yeah, six, 2006. I said, there's a really interesting story. There's a senator coming out of Illinois who's going to run for president named Barack Obama. And this guy is the real deal.
Do you mean Barack Hussein Obama?
Well, he didn't quite get it at that moment. It didn't play into the Muslim craziness. But I brought it up, and I didn't think it was going to. I didn't even think about it. And I started telling him the story, and I'm like, this guy is, you know, he's raising money. He's, you know, there's incredible attention being paid in Illinois. He's going to be a real player. And he goes, what's his name?
They couldn't even pronounce it.
Yeah, and I said,
remember on cable news, if you listened in, they pronounced his name in so many different ways.
Barack.
Yes,
right.
Barack.
And so I said, Barack Obama. And he goes, you're boring me. And I was on set with him in New York when he does that.
On the air?
Yeah, on the air. And so I'm like, oh, and then I was done. And then at that point, it was like, you know, he was like, I'm going to move on. This is too arcane, we were talking about. And then, lo and behold, 2 years later, when Barack Obama becomes president, I put him on the radio show, and I go, do you remember when you basically tossed me off your show on CNN because you thought that I was boring you with the details of Barack Obama? I like to take a
picture. Did he acknowledge it?
Oh, yeah.
He remembered that you brought up this name that he didn't know? And
yeah. I knew him well. I mean, we worked together for... Mm-hmm. He's a little nuts. There's no question about it. He's very emotional. He's got a bunch of there's a bunch of books written about him, including one he wrote about himself, about his childhood and all that. Mm-hmm. He has a lot of he owns his own emotionalism.
Well, and he in the last few years has come back around a little bit to talk about, you know, the role that he played in.
Yes.
Ginning up anger and hostility.
Mm-hmm.
Does he take responsibility for it?
He did, but then he went after Trump for, you know, basically, you know, using his trick, and he knows his trick is bad because he's a very devout Mormon, and he's, you know, he wants to look at this, you know, world differently. But then he made another turn back toward Trump because he saw he was losing his audience.
Mm-hmm.
He had a lot of business stuff. I mean, he bought a building in the old Disney building in New York. He bought the top floor to build Mercury Radio Arts, his company.
Yeah. Didn't he kind of overspend on that? Was the story?
May have overspent. Yeah.
And the
I don't really recall.
Coat too, right?
Yeah. Is what?
The ostrich coat.
He had an ostrich coat. Yeah.
Who doesn't?
But I gotta say,
I've got one.
The jump the shark moment. When you're buying ostrich, I think that should be.
It's a moment of intervention, I think, when your friend buys something like that. Like,
well,
wait a minute.
But I want to say something though. This is important because he's a real human being though, and he is a, you know, warts and all, he is exactly what you get. He is not his emotion about the caliphate. He was right about the caliphate, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was ISIS. He was predicting it, and no one was paying any attention.
The problem is when he got on the blackboard and he started connecting the caliphate to Obama.
Yes, that was a problem.
Three different degrees of separation.
Then
he was like, wait a minute.
Then he was boring me at that point. But it was and so he did. He sort of apologized.
I love my country. And look, we've got a president who's connected to this.
And he was a big part of that early kind of, You're either with me and against them, or you hate America.
Right. That's right.
Right.
I didn't take that.
That to me has always struck is so hollow, as though, you know, there's only a stop or a go.
Right. And that's why yesterday I was thinking about this, that I'm, you know, this America First thing bothers me, because to me, I look at it like this. Be an American first. Put everything else, the first most important obligation we have as citizens is to the safety of the United States of America and the welfare of the United States of America, which comes at A, paying attention to the basic tenets of the Constitution, which yeah. are free speech, and we are going to respect and not get in the way of or criminalize or punish speech.
And some parts of the Constitution are not more important than other parts of the Constitution.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't get to pick and choose.
That's yeah. right.
Two doesn't beat one, although two can shoot one, which is a problem. So there are, and I just, I look at it this, that's why I was never a gigantic hit in conservative radio, because it was like, and I couldn't do it. I just was not interested in it, and I said that to my agent at the time.
I remember how pain you were. You and I used to talk about this a little bit. You know, if there was pressure on you to go in certain directions, I thought you did an incredible job of, one, insulating your audience from that, but two, staying true to who you were. Mm-hmm. Whereas a lot of guys in your line of work
yep.
will bend to the political whims or the program director whims.
Right, because they figure that they're going to get an audience faster because that audience hasn't been... That conservative audience was... The perception was that not just conservatives or Republicans, but people who... You know, would be susceptible to messaging like, you know, like they're all out to get you and the Muslims are going to kill you and the blacks are going to do this and the Hispanics are going to do that and all that. That where you're naming and blaming, that's the tactic that's used.
Which is all we're really seeing on cable news right now, it seems.
Right.
Like, when you look to the opinionated sections of those news, the programming on those stations.
It was the fastest way to get a number. It was the fastest way to get ratings.
And you
was
see
to,
it.
Was to do that.
And that was, you know, it's kind of an old radio trick, I suppose. But look, you see it now in cable news, that there's yeah. this polarization, and it works.
And I didn't want to live that way because I couldn't live with myself. I couldn't go to... I mean, I voted for probably more Republicans than I have Democrats in my life, but I'm not going to go down that road. I'm not going to go mm-hmm. down a road of vilifying people by race or ethnicity
right.
or sexual orientation or any of those things. Yeah. And it's not about being politically correct. It's about being a human being
That's
who
right.
lives in a world in which we, you know, in a big city, you're exposed to the fact that there is great things that come from all people.
Right,
right.
From diversity. Absolutely.
And I think that, I think exposure is key there, because until you've, you know, met somebody who, you know, has suffered with their sexuality or has, you know, who is of a different faith than you or who comes from a different economic background than you, you know, I don't think until you've, you know, personally seen that or lived that or, you know, worked your way through it with a loved one, it's really hard to empathize.
Turn your back on yeah. an entire, you know, millions of other people who may have that same experience unless something else in your life has gone so wrong that you fail to have empathy. And that's one of the things I found about that style of radio that I couldn't connect with, was it had no empathy.
Absolutely.
Zero empathy. And that's now... It's why our politics are like this. I mean, they grew together, like they intertwined like a vine around a tree, but conservative talk radio and now what we have. And I would argue that it's not even in a classical sense conservative. Right? It's designed to scare people and give them a solution. And the solution is you.
And agree with everything the Republican does.
And don't you think both sides do it? But don't you think mm-hmm. politics, and to a lesser degree the media, you know, are a pendulum, right? They swing from one side to the other. You know, so we're at this moment now where the extremes are
right.
getting the attention.
Oh, and I, by the way, and that's why, like liberal radio, first of all, no one ever, there's never been anybody successful doing that.
I've never understood that. I don't understand why, in this environment, with people wanting to go to their tribe, that hasn't had a resurgence.
Because, well, that tends to be a younger crowd and a more technologically experimental crowd. So they get it in other places. You know, that's like liberal radio. The other thing, too, is that the thought was with conservative radio, originally with conservative radio, like Limbaugh, why Limbaugh was such a great success, was because he he was doing saying things you weren't hearing anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. But isn't it interesting though that you think back 5-10 years ago and there was this huge criticism. The mainstream media, you're not being told this. Well, Rush, in that period, had the number one show on radio. Fox News, number one cable news channel.
Well, so, sometimes you weren't being told that anywhere else, as we have now learned, because it wasn't actually true.
Right.
And that's part of the problem, and that's why, don't make stuff up or cherry pick a one fact out of a fact chain and say this defines the entire fact chain experience, and that's what a lot of people did, and it also was using the tactics. It uses a language tactic that I'm totally uncomfortable with because mm-hmm. everything is coded, mm-hmm. right?
Absolutely.
When the president is going after people, my 30 years of this, when he's going after somebody, I know what he's saying.
Right.
Black people. That's what he's saying, and most right. 9 out of 10 times, when he said the Democrats, the liberals, the this, the that, he's trying to paint an image. NFL players. Right, he's painting an image in his in the beholder's eye ear that is saying, "Oh yeah, I know what he's talking about, and those people scare me, and that's what it is." And even though he's not saying it overtly, it plays with those people. Not everybody sees it that way, but the people he knows he wants to see it that way will, mm-hmm. and that's what he's doing. We live in a really scary time in a lot of respects, but I think, like so many other people have said, America is great. America is the great social experiment. As long as we do not lose the rule of law, this will right itself. If we lose that, if he starts taking, he starts arresting people for their politics or, and this...
Controlling investigations that
yes,
are about him.
Right. Firing people who are investigating him, things like that. And the Republican Party goes along with it. The Republican Party will not... Well, it will take the Republican Party 2 generations to dig their way out of that.
Well, I'd watched CNN today, and just with the latest, charges and the guilty plea against these two former inner circle members of the Trump regime, they basically were trying to get any Republican to call in today, and they couldn't find one.
Yeah.
Until I think one step forward, the guy from Wisconsin who goes on Fox a lot, he came in and kind of had this, sort of head bowed, okay, I'll take one for the team sort of feeling about him. But why not? Why not stand up at this moment and say something?
We all know Republican politicians. We have friends who are in Republican Party politics.
Yes, of course.
And we, and some of them are close. And, I've had a number of conversations over the last 2 years with, don't you think someone should say something here?
Yeah.
Right?
Well, yeah.
And I've had Republican politicians say to me, well, is this the sword we want to die on? Is this the moment I want to break with my party's establishment, the people who hand out committee assignments, the people who, hand out campaign cash? And, that can be a scary proposition to go out on your own.
Yeah, well, right, because you'd be the one out on your own. But I think that history will regard some of those folks much better than others. And some of these people are doing it just for their own enrichment. One of the things about Donald Trump that is most fascinating to me is that people like to be around him because he's really rich, and they figure that some of that gold is going to fall off the tree, right, toward them. And that's a little bit of his trick, right? That's why he's a fabulous. That's why he inflates his own self-worth, a dollar amount worth. But I think there are people thinking, well, on the other side, we'll all, I was loyal to him, so I'll end up, owning buildings somewhere with him. I know there are people who believe that. Hmm. And they are wrong. Because everyone's, look at Duncan Hunter. Everyone's going to jail at some point. Everyone! All right.
Seeing a lot of it.
Right. And not because they politically disagreed, because they broke the law! Then we got to go. I'd love to sit around and talk to you forever about this, but
let me know if you get skilling to swear on the interweb.
Okay, I'm going to do what I can. Can I go right to Judy here? Is that all right? All right, let's do that. Judy, do you have the WGN news?
I do. Would you like me to do it right now?
Yeah, go right ahead.
All righty.
Okay, thank you, Judy. of music playing here.
Yeah.
Sometimes I can't hear what's going on. I think it's a medical condition. Isn't that right, Tom Skilling?
Well, I hope not, Ro. I must say, I was a little taken during Judy's newscast with whatever that was that we inserted there in the middle of the newscast. That was different. You know what? Did you guys hear that?
I didn't hear that. Was there some music in the middle?
Yeah.
The spot fill. Oh.
That's what it is.
Okay, so.
Yes.
Okay, so here's what.
I think it's relaxing.
We're on the interwebs.
I'm going to blow my brains out.
Wait. We got to explain this, though, because people don't hear this.
Yeah.
So, on our stream show, we hit a button that triggers the commercials that are heard on the stream. And depending on which stream you're listening to, whether it's in the WGN app or TuneIn or however you're doing, Alexa, whatever it is, I didn't ask you to do anything, Alexa, turn off. There is no two things that are the same, right? Because some of the stuff is actually even targeted directly to the listener. So we don't hear the commercials at all. What we hear is this wackadoodle music that sounds like we are like in one of those modern, like one of those like 1970s apocalyptic future movies where people
right.
are Soylent Green, where uh-huh. we're being wheeled into our demise, you know, in a really septic sanitary
in one of those overly hipster lobby hotels.
And every now and then there's a voice from the past, you know,
yeah,
you
hear yeah. that's gonna break right. down walls.
Right.
Yeah.
Is that the Berlin Wall they were talking about or what?
I don't know. But I figured that this was probably put together by Duffy. And, I was trying to, I was picturing him in the production studio putting this thing together.
He's our sonic master.
Yeah.
I wish we could play it, but it triggers the commercial. can't play it.
It's very unique. It's kind of mesmerizing.
Yeah, it's mesmerizing, but it's also, I gotta tell you, what happens is it relaxes you. They should play this in doctor's offices
or
airline waiting lounges or whatever, because it's like, once you hear it, it's like, it basically is like audio Ambien.
Ro, you know what? I had an out-of-body experience. I had to reach up to the ceiling because my soul was floating away. I had to pull it back in.
Did you see us all talking about you over your body?
I know.
Is that what you saw?
Yeah.
It's what it feels was, like.
It,
and
yeah.
I'm going to lobby to change that because because when we come back, all of a sudden I'm like a jazz DJ. You know,
you feel like too mellow to do your job, don't you? I mean, like
I
Tom, you've got a lot of newscasts to do tonight and weathercasts.
I know.
You can't pull off too much.
That's like when you listen to progressive rock radio years ago, and the approach was that mellow approach. You know, it's just hey, I'm mellow, and how
That's
are you
right.
feeling? And so, I kind of felt like we were going into that. It's trance inducing.
Welcome to the Tulum spas, where all of your desires shall be met.
Yes. You know what, Ro? That would have fit right into that format very nicely.
Mm-hmm.
That little spot filler.
Yeah. Oh, it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That WNUA when that was on here.
Right.
That station used to freak me out because there was stuff on there that was like whales singing, and you're like, I don't. Why am I listening to this?
It's all Dean Richards works over here.
He was there, wasn't he?
WNUA. Yes. Yes, and. He would always do his smooth jazz.
We had this great thing.
I know.
This band that we have on, Great Moments in Vinyl, that we love, one of the great Chicago bands. If you ever see a Great Moments in Vinyl show coming up, they play classic record albums, you know, like just in a perfect way. And they tell the stories about how they were made, and it's just a wonderful live experience.
Yeah.
Well, that guy was Bill Cochran or Lindsey Cochran, depending on which radio station he was working at. And he was the voice of WNUA. So
his voice is so recognizable. If you grew up here, you've just heard his voice on so many. If you've listened to radio at all, you've heard his voice.
It's one of those beautiful, mellifluous voices. You
absolutely.
Know? Yeah. Yeah. We used to have a whole stable of announcers here that were like that. You know, you had Carl Grayson who could talk and rattle the walls,
Right.
The walls would vibrate.
Well, Orion is like that.
Orion.
Orion has that that sound. And that's why I never thought I was ever going to make it in radio. Because I thought you had to sound like Bill Curtis or Orion Samuelson or one of those guys that no one else was going to be was going to make it.
And then somebody realized, hey, the rest of the world doesn't talk like that, so maybe they'll accept people that don't, you know, fit that kind of stereotypical mold. And yet it is marvelous.
It is.
I had a program director early on who's a guy saved my career, and he was like, son, it is not how you sound, it is what you say.
It's true.
And it's like, all right.
That's actually pretty simple and pretty true.
Yeah.
Right? It's a good advice.
Well, you know, it's funny. I remember we had a switchboard operator here, and when they brought Bob Collins in that really broke that mold here at this station, he came in, and at first the switchboard, she said the calls came in complaining about, who is this idiot you put on
this young punk kid.
I know.
Yeah.
And then she said about a month later, when he went on vacation, the switchboard lit up. Where is he? bring him back here again. And they already were missing Bob at that point. And again, it was. And some of the old hands here didn't quite know how to handle Bob. I remember Carl was reading an Isuzu commercial one time. And every time he'd say Isuzu, and Bob would say Gesundheit or something like that. And Carl was quite thrown by it at first. You know, there'd be this pause and this dead air. And it was because that had never happened before.
That's because GN has always been, until I got here, the gold standard of Chicago broadcasting. And everybody, this is really true, though, that every, like, this was all of the greats. I mean, how many people are in the Radio Hall of Fame from here, right?
Oh, yeah.
And LS, I think I ruined that, and then I ruined here.
This
is like, I don't know, the two greatest radio stations maybe in American history.
You are an institution.
Oh, I'm an institution. Just ask my publicist.
A classic, and so you haven't ruined anything.
But the point is that I didn't sound like any of those people, I was always afraid. And then but Bob Collins, you know, he was one of those guys that when you listen to him, like Wally.
Yeah.
Like when I was a kid and my parents were listening to Wally, because that was the law in Chicago.
You
actually got a ticket if you were pulled over not listening to Wally in the morning. There were two paths he was on in everything he was saying. There was always a second meaning to almost everything. And you thought, look at, there were, 100-year-old ladies he was giving a ladybug wristwatch to. And they're like, isn't he a wonderful young boy? But there was some dirty, dirty, dirty stuff going on.
See, that's funny you say
that. In his mind.
I never picked up on that. Ever. I mean, my dad would drive me to Lane Tech High School in the morning.
That's why your dad was listening to him.
And he was listening to him, for sure. And I would listen in the back, and it became just part of our lives. You know, we would hear it. Molly Phillips, of course, and Orion, and everybody. And my dad worshipped them all. But I just thought they were such, good human beings. But I never saw multi-layers of being any adult
there's a lot of it.
Kind of commentary in there.
There was a lot of it.
I got to go back and listen to some of that.
And
Bob, I understand it now.
And Bob was like a music, Bob was a radio top 40 DJ that worked over, made his way over.
We played things on this station that had never gone out on the air at the station before. And they like country music and, the Christmas Carol lineup would be, Grandma Was Run Over by
a reindeer,
which back then seemed controversial.
It did.
Now, cheesy as hell. But then.
But at the time.
Yes. He was breaking molds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. People loved Bob.
Yeah.
And so it was an interesting time.
So are you, that thing happened. My parents would listen to GN or BBM.
Yeah.
Right? And then I would sneak away and listen to LS.
Uh-huh.
And I would try to win over listening to, like, in the car.
You're
trying to get my parents, LS or CFL, to listen to music, to listen to top 40 music.
Because
these
always
guys
lost.
Weren't playing this.
That game. We never won the control of the radio in the car.
Well, I started, I'd win for a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
And then sometimes my parents would listen to FMT or NIB, and I'd have to listen to classical music. And I'm like.
You really had the full range.
I stuck my head out of the car like a dog when that was going on.
I can't listen.
I guess it would be 30 degrees outside, and I'd be like, I can't, this is driving me nuts.
I know. It's interesting. The first album I ever owned was Tchaikovsky's. Now, wait till you hear this. Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker Suite. And the reason was, was. I was in grade school, and they were playing that in the school, and I was quite intrigued by that music. I think it all has to do with what we're exposed to, you know, and I think we get used to it. I wish I had classical music background.
Oh,
it is what you're exposed to.
Yeah.
So my mom grew up in England, so we always listened to Petula Clark and things like
that.
And you know, and it's funny because then that becomes part of your repertoire, right? The things you know and love.
I know. By the way, what was in the music and what is in the music over in the UK? I mean, it's just amazing.
Absolutely.
And if you listen
for
to
such a little island with so few people on it, why do they make such great art? Is that your
don't
question?
They?
Yeah.
You know why? I can answer. This falls right into you.
Uh-huh.
Years, average days of overcast.
I think you're right. You know, I've always thought that too, Ro, and it's interesting to hear you say that. Like Celtic music, it's so beautiful and it's melancholy and all, but it matches the climate there, you know?
Yeah.
It just, and we're profoundly influenced by the weather that we see.
Right. If it's nice outside,
you know,
you're not sitting around inside, you know.
Right.
Mahler did not sit around. If Mahler were actually from the Caribbean, we would have never had any of his music.
I think that's
any
right.
Any of the sad, depressing, Teutonic.
I think you're absolutely right.
I think they also have a pub culture where everybody sings. So and then also that's because of the weather. I think
right.
They're going into the pub
mm-hmm.
and spending the evenings
and
there.
And they're drunk.
And they're a little bit, drunk, and they sing, and things go places, and they come up with some great music.
Generalizing a little.
No, it's not. It's really not.
Tom,
I don't know. Have you been there? I mean, it's there's
Mr.
a lot of
Skilling with these UK roots. I mean, I'm a UK mutt. I've got Welsh and me Irish. Skilling is Scottish, and my mother's people were the Clarks. So, and then we had the Irish Catholic and the Irish Protestant family, and so we did that.
They actually blew themselves up in the garage.
I'll tell you something. It's kind of interesting to grow up with that going on in your family because you become so sick of it. You think, I'm never, ever going to do that. Judge people on the basis of religion or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a
lot funny.
Experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Did you ever learn any of the swear words in the languages? Because then they don't carry over here, so you can kind of say them.
No.
Well, bloody, right?
Bloody hell, my mom used to always say. She'd say, bloody hell. And then if she was really mad, she'd say, bloody hell, fire. And then you knew, you watched out. You ducked because she was going to throw something at you.
That's interesting. I don't know that I ever heard that sort of.
And bollocks.
Bollocks.
Right,
I love
that one.
Yeah.
Bollocks.
I always think of Tony Blair when I hear that. You know, that's the first time I think I noticed that term when he said, it's bollocks. And
we knew we'd get you to swear before the show was over. This whole thing was a trick since we're on the internet to get you to swear. We got it.
I see.
We got him.
Yeah.
I just want to prove it to Ben Brantley.
Send that to Theresa May.
I know. Exactly.
Or Meghan Markle or somebody. Who do we got over there?
Sure. We got a representation now. Royalty.
It's a fascinating place over there.
It's great.
I love it. I think it's really cool. I remember my one and only trip before these recent ones, as a young person, I took a backpacking trip through there and went over on the France. They had a special deal. It was cheaper to go around the ship than it was to buy a plane ticket, interestingly enough. And what an experience that was. But went over there, and I went over with a roommate, and the two of us rented a car, and we drove through the UK. And we took the ferry from Wales over to Ireland and then back again. But I remember we stopped and asked directions from a woman there, and she had just dropped apparently her little children, who were all in uniforms, off at school. And we said, ma'am, excuse us, can you tell me how to get to this and such a town, which it turns out was on the other side of the UK. And she said, forgive me, she said, you know, the saying in our country is, if you want to know where somewhere is, ask an American, because she said, we don't travel distances like that, like you do in your country, because
right.
we don't have these vast open spaces around. And that was quite interesting.
Yeah.
But we had some friends from the UK over just couple of months ago, and it was a group of women. We went over on the Queen Mary, and they were our dinner partners. They had a week away from their husbands on this little trip. It was great. And so we were sitting there, and we had a great time. We all got to be very friendly. So they came over to visit, and Sean, my roommate, got them tickets to Hamilton, and they saw Hamilton, and then we all had dinner. And So I asked him, I said, you know, I've always wondered, the song Ferry Crossed to Mersey, is Mersey an island? I had never really researched that. Mm-hmm. That's what I asked them. Mm-hmm. They said, oh, no, it's a section of Liverpool. And I didn't know that. This beautiful melodic song, and it was all about a section of Liverpool, which you don't think of as...
Beautiful, really.
Gorgeous. Right? No, mm-hmm. it's a city, you know, and
it's kind of industrial. Yeah.
Exactly. City. But it was. They explained it was a section of Liverpool that was being sung about in that. But you know, we listen to songs like the Beatles talk about turnabouts and all this kind of stuff. Who knew what a turnabout was? And we'd sing the lyrics, right, and we didn't know what we were singing. You know.
Exactly. But, well. Half the music from the 1970s, you did not know what you were actually singing. Again, if I could just bring this back around to Wally, there were two meanings to everything.
See, I got to go back and listen to some Wally. I really do.
Yeah.
No idea.
No,
there was
a lot
gifted.
Of stuff. Well, I have a friend whose parents knew him well,
mm-hmm.
and they and you know this is before I you know knew
thought
them.
About doing yeah, radio.
Way before that, and they my friend when Wally passed away. A few years ago, my friend went to go see him right before he passed. You know, right before he passed.
Yes.
And he was living up in Lake Geneva, and we were at my friend's house in Lake Geneva. You know, here we are, a couple of 45-year-old guys or 50 or whatever we were at the time, and he pulls out these record albums. He goes, you know, Wally gave these to my parents. Uh-huh. And there were these, LPs,
yeah.
and with naked women on the covers. Oh. They were like adult party records, they used to call them.
Oh, my word.
Right.
Is that right?
That had body,
lyrics
and music. And
wow.
I think the B side of the album was for an orgy or something. Whatever it was, it was like, he had these things, he goes, and because I knew his parents fairly well, and his parents were kind of, a little edgy, along that line. Because, apparently they were having sex in the 60s, too. I was not aware of it. But
yeah.
Yeah,
isn't that amazing?
Yeah, we were born then, so maybe they were.
I
somehow
know.
It
exactly.
happened, yeah.
Yeah, I always thought we just kind of flew out of thin air, Just like when I eat meat. I'm not eating meat. I'm eating something that grew on a plant somewhere, I can't think
exactly.
about how it got to my table, It just... But, isn't that something? That's a side of Wally.
We didn't know about.
He was, he was revered here. I was a newcomer, and you looked at Wally Phillips. He was such an icon in the market, and he's quite quiet. And, I'd see him in the hall, and you say hello, and he was very quiet. He was busy at work. Phil Donahue would be like that, too. He'd walk down the hall, and, he was thinking about stuff, and you say hi. And
he's a very scattered guy, Phil Donahue.
Yeah, it was quite... Well, I'll tell you...
He's a really great guy, but to have a conversation with him,
because
he has the attention span of, a housefly, right? Like you're talking to him, and it's mine's going around, and you're like, what? Red balloon! Wait, there's a red balloon!
Well, at the point then, nobody knew who I was here. It was some kid walking down the hall, and they, they'd be polite and all the rest, but they didn't know who I was. And so why would they spend their time in a lengthy conversation with me?
Right.
But
I know the exact feeling.
Yeah.
I know. But you always felt, when you were a kid and coming up in the business, you always felt compelled to go up and try to meet these people and talk to them.
Of course.
Touch them and stuff like that.
Right.
Remember, there was the whole group, Irv Cups in it, and Jack Brickhouse, and Wally, and Roy Leonard was in there.
And now you're that guy, Tom. You've touched a lot of people's lives and helped them.
That's really true, man.
You think about how many people have gotten interested in weather because of you. My God.
Well, that's nice. And I'll tell you something. One thing it does, it kind of surprises me. I thought this whole 40th anniversary thing would fly right on by, and frankly hoped it would. But you realize...
people reach out.
we're in a business where we're all quite visible, and you know, and people listen to us, and we talk to a mass audience every day through our work. And you don't think about it. We're all so busy doing it, you don't have time to think about it. I still am surprised. How about you guys? When you go out and people say, "Oh, hello," it's amazing to me.
It is.
You go to a supermarket or something, and people come up to you like, you know, and say, "Oh, hello," and it's like you're, you know, a long lost friend, and you realize, hey, this medium really does reach out to
right because you know we just go to work,
yeah,
and we're doing this, and the most important mechanic I think that people learn first in this is pretend no one is watching or listening so you feel comfortable.
It's just you and one other person.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's you and looking into the camera or talking to the microphone and just getting, you know, and then you find out that there's 10 people listening, which we found out on the internet. All right, Tom, we are going to run here. We got to do Judy's news here at the top of the hour. We want to do that.
By the way, apologize to Judy for me. I got in here. And I was running late.
You can apologize. She's listening. You can apologize directly to her.
Tom, Judy, you don't ever have to say you're sorry to me.
I don't accept it.
No.
I start in the morning at 8:30. My day is to pull down all the... So I have the raw data, but then I put it all together in type form. When I get in here, it's the first thing I do when I walk in. So I know what I'm going to say, and I know what the... I didn't have it all scripted, so I thought rather than getting on here and stumbling through as some ad lib thing, I didn't quite know what to do. But you moved on, so thank goodness.
So you did what I do. You hid under your desk until it passed.
I know.
I get it.
I didn't know anybody would know I was in here.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm not here.
I talked to Jeff Carlin because you know we were coordinating what time this hit was going to take place and all the rest.
Sure.
And and he wanted to know if I was getting the proper feed here on this.
Yeah, the box and the little funny box that you got in front of you there.
Yeah.
I got it. Hey, it all worked out.
It did.
It all worked out. We got to tell the story about Wally's dirty albums.
Know. Yeah. Yeah. Boy.
They're the party albums, party records, or whatever they were called.
That's quite a takeaway.
Yeah. Oh,
I tell you.
It's
wow.
Something. Yeah, he had a mind. He was quite a player. Quite a liver. He was one of the great entertainers in the history of this business.
Mm. Yeah, it's true.
No question. So.
Well, I've learned something again today. Mm-hmm. As I do every day. Yeah. I talk on this visit with you on this program. Yeah. So
I never really got to meet him, and my friend wanted to take me to... Just say, you know, when he was thinking about it, I'm like, that's too intimate. I can't,
that would
you know,
be a strange
that'd
time
be weird.
To
I don't want
to
be in the middle of that. And, you know, it's like, who the hell's this guy? You know, I didn't, and it was like, and I was, you know, I revered him so much. I didn't want to, you know, be involved with it. So then that's when he showed me the albums. He goes, don't worry about him. Look at this. And then I was like, no, I'm not
that's
going.
That's not the image I had.
I am not going. All right, we got to run. Thank
you, Tom.
All right, guys.
All right, this is
later.
WGN Everywhere. Judy Pilak has the news. Joins us from the NBC Nightly News. You'll be hearing from him as the Ro Contra with Anna DeBlancis continues here on WGN Everywhere. All right. And Lester, I guess, I don't know if you noticed this, yesterday, maybe you were off yesterday. I don't know. Were you working?
To be off.
Oh, no, I was
business.
Working. We were all working.
They would have called you in if you weren't.
Yeah. Something happened yesterday. I want to play. This is what's making news right now and see what the NBC News reporting is on it. This was Donald Trump earlier today talking to Fox and Friends.
Did you know about payments?
Later on, I knew. Later on. But you have to understand, Ainsley, what he did, and they weren't taken out of campaign finance. That's a big thing. That's a much bigger thing. Did they come out of the campaign? They didn't come out of the campaign. They came from me, and I tweeted about it. You know, I don't know if you know, but I tweeted about the payments. But they didn't come out of campaign. In fact, my first question when I heard about it was, did they come out of the campaign? Because that could be a little dicey. And they didn't come out of the campaign, and that's big. But they weren't, it's not even a campaign violation. If you look at President Obama, he had a massive campaign violation. But he had a different attorney general, and they viewed it a lot different.
Okay. Okay, well, he has his own attorney general, and they're not viewing it quite that same way. What is he referring to? We have any idea what he's referring to in terms of Barack Obama?
No, we don't. I mean,
Hold on one second. Tom, hold on, please. Hold on. All right, there we go. Tom's going, screaming at you. Don't worry about it. He's fine. We put him back in his closet.
His weather area.
All right, go ahead.
No. His whole premise here is, what got Cohen in trouble was not where the money came from. It's what the money was for, to cover this up in the weeks leading up to the election. So the president seems to have a misunderstanding of what got Cohen in trouble, yeah. And then to the other issue of one of the things we're going to point out tonight is a bit of a contradiction. So he says, he knew later on, but back in April, you remember the clip on Air Force One, he says, he was asked, Mr. President, do you know about the $130,000 payment to Stormy Daniels? And he says, no. So there's a bit of a contradiction going on there, even as he tries to dig himself out and suggest that he's not in legal jeopardy.
Right.
He doesn't seem to be helping his cause. And then you've got Cohen, who seems ready and willing to share more.
I guess to that point, and again, it's not illegal, and Sarah Sanders was asked this today from the podium, well, did he lie to the American people? And she's like, well, no, that's...
So that's a ridiculous accusation,
yes.
A ridiculous premise.
But he did lie to the American people, but that's not a crime to lie to the American people, right?
No. No. The only thing where it would be a crime is if he, speaks to federal prosecutors and lies. Then that becomes a crime.
Right. All right. So then, with more to come here in terms of Michael Cohen, Lanny Davis, his attorney, has been out on television. He was on MSNBC last night dropping some breadcrumbs about other things that might be coming out of Michael Cohen before this is all said and done. But he did not agree to a cooperator deal, which would have saved him some time at sentencing. And the legal analysis that we have had indicates that this doesn't really help him by dropping stuff without a cooperator deal. Do we have any clarity on that?
Well, I mean, the suggestion I heard is, let's say he goes and talks to Mueller and provides something of value, that Mueller could issue a recommendation on his sentencing. But that's not the same thing as a deal. I think we're all a little perplexed as to what's in this. I mean, this may just be a man who just wants to, clear his conscience and feels that he was a man at the roadside here. And, he's already been subpoenaed by New York State officials who are looking into the Trump Foundation, the charities, and some of their tax payments. He's already in a mood now to talk to state and local folks about what he has. But I don't know that amounts to a guarantee of a reduced sentence. So it's a bit curious if there was some kind of a side deal here or what.
Lanny Davis spoke to that today. He said that his client, Michael Cohen, decided to, quote, do what's right and for the country when he saw the meeting with Putin, when the president came out on the side of more believing partially or mostly what Putin said over the intelligence community. That's when he made the firm decision to say, you know what, I'm going to tell all. And then on Rachel Maddow's show, Lanny Davis said something about how he actually, his client, has information about how the president knew of the Russian hacking before the hacking occurred, and that he does have information from Mueller that would be very useful.
Yeah, and that's all very good and interesting, but I'm just in the realm of speculation here, but if you had that, would you have not played that card
already?
To get yourself out of jail?
3 to 5 years in prison.
Right, because you pled guilty on all 8 counts, wasn't it? All 8 counts that he had.
Well, they had agreed on the 8 counts to plead on, but that's because obviously there had been communication between Lanny Davis, his attorney, and the Southern District of New York federal prosecutors. So I assume that they had that conversation about what, they refined the charges and came up with it. It just seems, the whole thing seems odd that there's ex post facto agreement, cooperation here when there could have been, in real time cooperation.
Unless they're looking for a sentence reduction, right?
But they would have gotten that in advance.
Yeah, and I think the one thing we can all be certain on is this is not a good day for a couple of days for the White House right now.
I mean,
there's a huge uncertainty, and even all the witch hunt talk doesn't apply here because it's Southern District of New York and not Team Mueller.
Well, it was a Mueller referral. I mean, but don't you get the sense that no matter what, the president speaks in broad strokes anyway, right? These are themes. There was no collusion. There was no this. There was no that. I mean, the details are often muddled, if not inaccurate.
So, he speaks in mantras.
So it is not necessarily connected to anything. He just wants his, he wants to be able to inform his supporters of things to say at dinner to the rest of the family who's like, well, Dad! You know, so, and I think that's kind of where we sit right now with him, and we'll just have to see, because I don't know. I was interesting on, I think it was CNN last night. There was a former FBI guy who was like, this just does not get easier from here.
Mm-hmm.
Because all of this stuff comes out. There will be more. The problem isn't really going to end up with whether or not, because he's got a Clinton problem right now. This is about lying and misdirecting about sex. And even though Republicans, you know, got up and made these big speeches about how he's brought disgrace on the office of the White House and all, or in the office of the presidency and the White House, they're not doing that this time. And I don't, and as you'll recall, even with all of that in 1998 and 1999, there was an impeachment trial, but he was acquitted in the impeachment trial.
Yeah, and remember, there's a little bit of a dance on Capitol Hill right now on this. I mean, Democrats are being very careful with, you know, the so-called I word, impeachment, because that, you know, would obviously set off the Trump base and galvanize them. But there's this movement to, hey, how do we get them to delay the Supreme Court? Can you have someone who's, you know, been implicated in a crime, you know, appointing the next justice to the Supreme Court? I mean, there's a lot of moving parts here and a lot of big questions.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Lester, we'll see you tonight. NBC Nightly News at 5:30. Thank you, sir.
We'll have a lot of coverage. We'll see you then.
Thanks. Bye. All right, that's Lester Holt.
That is the Lester Holt.
You know him and you love him from the Cook County Court video.
I know. I got out of jury duty this time because my last name didn't begin with the right letter, so I didn't have to report for my backup jury duty. But
that's alphabetist.
Yeah, it was very. I was wondering if there was some kind of a lawsuit there, you know, sort of. the E's are okay, but the D's, no, no. Anyway, I was sort of happy, but whatever. It didn't get to go. But you know, the one thing you look forward to is seeing the Lester Holt with the mustache.
Right.
With the mustache.
Right. And I gotta say that Lester, when he first started, had a kind of a wispy mustache because he was 14. I think people don't realize that.
Yeah.
And then he grew into like the full, you know, like. By the time he was 30, he had the full mustache going.
Uh-huh.
And then he even realized he looked like he was a village person.
Well, I thought he said that they kind of made him shave it. We'll have to ask him about that to confirm, but that they sort of wanted the clean look and that he he went along with that. But then he looked sort of strange to anybody who knew him from Chicago.
Right.
For several years. Now it looks good.
Yeah, the network people don't have facial hair.
They don't.
Yeah. You didn't...
You go to the local markets and you see the news anchors with the facial hair. But not on network. That doesn't fly.
You don't get a lot of facial hair on, like, the news guys.
No.
The talk guys you get,
somebody.
You know. You get the stubble, maybe, you know, on people like that. But that you don't get, it doesn't confer confidence, I think, when you've got facial hair. I think that's what
they say that you wonder what's behind it. What are you hiding or something? There's some, when you just only exist from the shoulders up, that there's something about it. That's what the consultants say. Of course, they ruin everything.
Yes, that's true. If we listen to consultants, neither of us would be here.
Right. Yeah. True.
It is interesting, though. There are certain professions, though, that go totally with the mustache.
Uh-huh.
And you could just kind of tell.
Like a detective?
Yeah. Police often. And now, like Chicago police, less so than, like in the South, you see a lot of guys with mustaches in the South. I don't know what that's all about. Firefighters. See a lot of firefighters with mustaches.
Uh-huh.
But the mustache only.
Because they can't wear beards, right? Because they're masked?
Well, I don't know. Now you see guys. Sometimes I see cops with, like, the stubble thing going.
But, I mean, like, the firefighters. I mean, they can't, with their oxygen masks, they have to, they can't wear beards.
True.
Because
it
affects the,
but why would
however
you,
that works.
Yeah, that's true. That would not create a seal.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, that's very. Thank you.
See, I learned something. That's what I'm here for. I'm not just here for sports, okay? I can add a little bit here and there.
Kev, did you make the fire department or not?
No, I couldn't grow a mustache. Yeah. That's why I said. I could only grow the neck beard, which is opposite of what you need as a fireman.
See, the worst thing.
Right.
Right. The neck,
so they're
the
like, you are very underqualified for this job. Get out of here. We never want to see you again. I said, okay.
I like that you're rocking the neck beard. That's always a good look.
That's all I can really do.
Hey, Violetta, what's going on the roadways? Savannah De Blancas right here on 720 WGN. We've got Tom. No, Tom is gone.
All right. We already talked to Tom.
Why am I going the wrong way? Mike Flannery is going to join us coming up in a few minutes to talk about this poll.
Shocking poll.
That came up. Shock poll, as they like to say on the Drudge Report. Shock poll! Whoop, whoop, whoop! That has J.B. Pritzker up by 16 points over Bruce Rauner.
Yeah, and it also found Donald Trump to have higher favorability ratings than Bruce Rauner in Illinois. How is that possible?
I don't know. It's interesting, though. There is a phenomenon, Donald Trump. It's fascinating, really, to watch people find their way to him, and when he's so obviously misrepresenting things, this isn't like a politician. This isn't your average politician shading the truth or, you know, saying a forward-looking statement that turns out not to be true. That's really standard stuff. He's talking about things in the back. Can we play this NFL thing? Because this is kind of interesting. Can we play this? Can you hand me back that NFL thing? Because I want to, let's do this here. We're going to play this in top five, but this is interesting here as well. That last night, the president, when he was speaking in Charleston, West Virginia, he made a...
What if being in recovery from a mental or substance use disorder was something we proudly showed the world? You might be surprised. Millions of people are in recovery, sharing hope, help, and support with family, friends, and community. Join the Voices for Recovery. For 24-hour free and confidential information and treatment referral for mental and substance use disorders for you or someone you know, call 1-800-662-HELP. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
I like that song.
You do? Of course you do.
Oh.
It's very soothing.
She's always going the other way.
No, but it feels like energetic, like you're ready to do something.
All right, well, there are 2 minutes of spots running, so we're going to just sit here and pretend that none of this ever happened.
Okay.
So we'll just wait for the 2 minutes.
So nobody came and hear us right now?
I don't know. I don't know what can be and can't be heard. Sophia Letta?
So don't say anything you wouldn't want to be heard.
This is fun.
Yeah.
It's like we're in like a black hole. Like, where are we right now? We're in no man's land.
This is like doing college radio where you know no one is listening.
Like middle of the night.
The in-house college. The in-house radio that comes through the power outlets, the dorm outlets, right?
If you tell your friends to listen, you know they're not even listening.
Yeah. So that's kind of what we're doing right now. It's just going around in this building right now, and we don't...
Pretty soon someone's going to be knocking on our door.
Yeah. You got to let me know when we're back, when we go back to being back on. All right, are you listening now to the show? Okay, good. All right, that's good.
So we're back?
No, he's going to let us know.
No, he's going to let us know.
I kind of like this.
In-house radio. If anybody's listening...
All right, Violet, I dare you. Tell us a secret.
Oh, I don't... Are you sure we're not on?
I'm not sure of anything.
Hmm.
This is wild.
I still have nothing to say.
I can't guarantee anything.
I plead the fifth then.
Yeah.
This is like
tricky. All right, we're back. All right, okay.
We're back.
All right, I'd just like to apologize
to
everybody on the stream that we
those commercials pressed the wrong button.
Just popped out of nowhere. My paper did this. All right. So as I was saying, Donald Trump says so many things that are provably false at any given time. Last night he was in Charleston, West Virginia. And he said this.
And unlike the NFL, you always honor and cherish our great American flag. It was just announced by ESPN that rather than defending our anthem, our beautiful, beautiful national anthem, and defending our flag, they've decided that they just won't broadcast when they play the national anthem. We don't like that. So while the players are kneeling, some of them, not all of them at all, you're all proudly standing for our national anthem. Thank you.
Okay. Monday Night Football doesn't show the national anthem ever.
Very rarely would they show it.
Only if it were, like, after September 11th did they show it.
Right.
The networks don't show the national anthem for the NFL unless it's the Super Bowl or a special performance on Thanksgiving or some other day.
The Department of Defense is paying them millions of dollars to do it.
Right. That
which is, that happens.
Yes.
That, but I don't know
that
why,
does
I,
happen.
See, I don't know why ESPN put a statement out saying they weren't going to do that, because it gave this perception that, whoa, 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 all of a sudden we're not going to show the anthem.
Did ESPN put a statement out saying
that? Well, the president of ESPN was speaking at, like, ESPN Media Days last week, mm-hmm. and he said that. It wasn't necessarily a statement, but it was a quote that was put out there, and it gave this perception that ESPN was all of a sudden canceling the national
anthem.
Yeah,
which anthem. They're not doing. He was saying that we don't play that, you know, that's not going to be an issue for us in terms of television, because he didn't want people pulling their spots off of ESPN, because there would be people in this context kneeling during the national anthem. Which, by the way, I totally understand. I understand why people are offended by that. I get it. But that's not what they do. Now, the only times that we've seen this, remember, when you see people during the national anthem kneeling, mm-hmm. it's you're seeing it afterwards mostly.
Right. It's usually filmed on the spot, and then because it becomes an issue, they show it.
Right.
Otherwise not. Fox Sports says going forward, they are going to show it for special broadcasts, which I think they have in the past, Veterans Day,
sure.
Thanksgiving,
what
and
I'm saying,
during
right.
the playoffs as well. And yes. then NBC has not weighed in yet about how they're going to do it. On occasion, they said in the past, we have shown it, but we're still working through what we're going to do, what our plan is. CBS says they won't show it.
Now, can I just explain something to you as a long-time broadcaster,
mm-hmm.
they fill that with commercials. They always have.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a period of time. They don't want to waste 2 minutes of commercial time.
That's right. Money talks.
With an off-key version
around.
Of the national anthem. That's how it goes. Watch sports. I mean, on local sports, you sometimes see the national anthem. You don't always see it.
No. Mm-mm.
You never see it in baseball. Right? Unless, again, it's a very special event. So, let's...
Kind of a non-issue issue.
Right. Let's not make stuff up. And he's just doing this. So he's released this. Listen to this. That's what the president did. Just heard after we... This is a quote. Just after we heard a sitting governor trash America. He's referring there to Andrew Cuomo of New York.
Mm-hmm.
When he said America's not that great. ESPN has now decided it will no longer play the national anthem before Monday Night Football. Again, not true. If America is too offensive for anyone in our country, then what are you doing in America?
Oh, gosh.
I'm calling on you to join me in denouncing this spineless, all in caps, surrender to the politically correct liberal mob. I was the first person to sign this petition. Now I need you to follow my lead and be the second. So he's sending out this petition. And now, I just want to know, is this from a Russian troll farm, or is this really from the president? Because, again, it's we're going to divide ourselves over football now. Why can't we be Americans first and go, you know what? If people want to kneel for the national anthem, you can be mad at them. You cannot watch it. You cannot. But that's their First Amendment right. If you don't want to watch football, don't watch football.
Right.
But this idea of they're not Americans because they're doing it is not accurate. They are obeying the Constitution. If they
That's
were,
right.
you know, if they were out there killing somebody or you know, taking your guns away, fine.
Only Americans would do that.
And here's what the ESPN president
said. Can do that.
We generally have not broadcasted the anthem, and I don't think there's going to be any change this year.
I think he was sort of forced
That's all
to
he said,
something.
Right?
Our
mm-hmm.
plan going into this year is to not broadcast the anthem. But we generally have not broadcasted the anthem, is what he said to start.
Yeah.
It's not like he's all of a sudden canceling
right.
ESPN's
right.
showing of the anthem.
He's cherry-picking one sentence out that is not really the context of the entire conversation. And he's seizing on it and trying to divide us with it. That's not right.
Which I
That's
think is
playing cheaply.
Is the definition of fake news?
Well, it's not fake news. It is a debate trick, which is a very, very cheap debate trick because it's easily defeated by the truth.
That's right. ESPN did say that during Monday Night Football, they aired the anthem after the 16th anniversary of 9/11 terrorist attacks, the day after the deadly shootings in Vegas, and then the first Monday after Trump began publicly criticizing players who protested.
Because they wanted to see them that they would do it, right? Because it was a news event. They declared that a news event at that point.
Right. So those are the situations recently when they have.
Yeah.
CBS says it's never really done it.
Communists! Judy? Do we? Are we back on the radio yet? No. When do we get back on the radio? Hold on one second, internet people.
Are you going to play that?
Oh, we can do the music
again soon. Oh, hopefully not.
No.
I can't take it.
I can't either.
No more.
Too much.
I can't either.
Well, this is, again, people don't know what we're talking about. When you hear the commercials,
like
we hear this music.
Trippy music.
It sounds like we were dying and going to heaven.
Over and over and over and over.
All right. Judy. Judy.
Yes.
Your turn. It's the Rokon Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. Actually, we're on WGN everywhere. We're on the web. We're on.
We are.
We're on everything.
You can get us everywhere.
The radio station has not rejoined us in this part of the broadcast, so wackiness has ensued.
It has been a little wacky. Why does it always do that to us when we're on the stream? Things get wacky.
I know. Now, Mike Flannery is joining us. Now, Mike, let me explain what's going to happen here. Are you ready?
I am.
I don't know why
I'm taking notes.
I don't know why you're laughing at that, but I will ask you this anyway. We're going to start talking about this, and then when the radio station rejoins us, this broadcast already in progress, we're going to have to reset what we have said.
Okay.
All right. So we're going to be upcoming. We're going to be discussing this poll that shows the Rauner campaign down by 16 points at this very moment.
Right.
But Donald Trump enjoying a greater
favorability rating
in Illinois than does Bruce Rauner, and we'll ask you about that. That's coming up in just a few minutes. In the meantime, since we're just on the web, we're just going to ask you to tell a really personal, embarrassing story about yourself.
So deepest, darkest
deepest
secret.
Deepest, sorry, so, and
this is,
go.
Yeah,
that's what we're all doing.
This is really, this is so intimate to, you know, the podcast, the folks listening on the stream. I guess there was that time in 1977 that I thought I had made a mistake. But my mistake was that I hadn't made a mistake.
Oh, that's very Trumpian of you.
Oh.
Hey, all right, since we've covered this with so many people, what are you making of this? What peril do you see Donald Trump in, especially now that the White House says he did nothing wrong? I don't know why you're asking if he lied to America, because he didn't do it. I'm offended.
I think this is very dangerous for the president. I think that, look, there are people who, as there were with Bill Clinton, there are people who just aren't going to care, who are with him come hell or high water. And, those folks are not going to be affected by this at all. Then there are the folks that hate him, and if he were to walk on water, would still hate him. But I think for many millions of Americans, this is disqualifying, and the story told by Michael Cohen, which presumably is supported by documents and tapes and other things that the feds have, I think it's going to hurt the president.
What about fellow Republicans? Because I wonder, sometimes things don't seem to stick on this president because of his whatever, fill in the blanks, his big personality, whatever it is, people will accept. But other Republicans,
I think it's because of his policies as well. It's not just the personality.
Mm-hmm. But I think when scandals hit, sometimes they just tend to make a dent here and there, and some of these have not, and this one in particular. You talk about Republicans who usually stand for the rule of law, and there's moral values has been part of the party in years past, and none of that seems to matter right now. But fellow Republicans are not exactly stepping up to the microphones today to try to describe why this is okay, and they're also not speaking out against the president. What do you make of that?
Look, a large majority of Republican voters who cast ballots in the primary, in the Republican primary, where all these Republican senators and congressmen have to run again, they're with the president. And, and it's not just because of the personality and the insults. And I think in some cases it's in spite of that. You know, folks who, I talk to them on a regular basis. I mean, folks who are pro-life, they want Brett Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court. They're hoping that Roe versus Wade gets overturned.
Can I stop you, though? But what happens when Brett Kavanaugh says, as he did earlier this week, that he believes that Roe is that Roe is settled law?
Settled law, but what does that mean? That's a term of art. It is settled law for now. You may have seen that some of the pro-life groups and evangelical church groups have said, don't worry about it. That's a term of legal art. He can still overturn even settled law. That's not a promise that he won't overturn it.
But isn't that the assurance?
I'll tell you what. Last night, immediately after this double whammy of Michael Cohen and Paul Manafort facing long prison terms, immediately after that, the president was in West Virginia, and he went to the go-to issue. I was just rewatching that campaign rally last night in West Virginia, where, among other things, he ripped Rahm. He mentioned, he said, look at the mayor of Chicago, and gigantic boos cascade through the hall, and he focused on the sanctuary city policies and immigration. If he said it once, he said it 25 times last night. Vote for the Democrats is a vote for open borders and crime and illegal aliens killing people, and a vote for Republicans is a vote for order and strength and getting these people the hell out of here. Yeah. You know, there are folks who...
Where have we heard that before?
Yeah, they want that, and they don't want, and they don't care about Cohen and Manafort.
Yeah, but there is a, I just have to say it, there's a danger to this, because this idea of we want law and we want order and we want these people out of here and those people are causing problems and I'm the only one who can save you from it and you know what I'm talking about, that is, that, you know, that's how, in creating fear and creating intense fear and intense division, politicians always try to create some fear and some division, but to differentiate themselves from their opponent. But he is, I mean, this is really more high octane than America is used to. Other parts of the world have been through this, and it never ends well.
Well, there are many many examples we can point to. That's absolutely the case. I hope, fingers crossed here that we don't end up like that. But, you know, you see Steve Bannon going back to Europe, and he's trying to revive. Speaking of places where some of this stuff didn't end well, he's over there trying to create, trying to pump up the same sort of feelings.
Populous.
In places where they
right.
were pumped up. Yeah. 75 years
ago. And how did that work out for the world? Right?
So good.
Let's go back to the history books on that one, right?
Yeah. 100 million people dead. That's how that works. And I just do not, for the life of me, understand why, other than the fact that we're having, you know, a die-off of the generation that actually experienced this. And many of the people in the generation that experienced this, you know, some of them like this, but there are some people really haunted by what they're hearing and what they're seeing. Because this scapegoating thing, it's bad. It is bad. It's the first, it's the canary
yeah, that's
in the
ugly.
Coal mine.
That's ugly. But on the other hand, you know, I mean, I will stick up for people who say we need to have control at the borders.
Okay.
You know, that we shouldn't
I don't
have
disagree
people
with that.
Just waltzing across. And you can go back 8 years ago and find Barack Obama giving speeches without the same intensity and without some of the same
rhetoric.
Maybe ugly ad. Yeah. We'll stick with rhetoric. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But he was saying the same thing.
Right. Right.
That's okay. I'm for border security. The wall is, and in the wall, he's. Yeah, I want the wall. I want the wall. I want the wall. I want the wall. Because it's because when people say they don't want it, he wants to fight against the people who are against him, and that rallies his support. So, but we don't actually need a full wall across the entire thing. Nobody who actually has studied this or wants to pay for it or knows how to pay for it or knows how to build it tells you that. But fine. If he wants, you know, more of a wall, great. If he wants increased money for border security, great. He wants technological overlays, he wants tougher stuff, that's fine. But going out and trying to do a scare tactic by taking the kids away from the parents, that didn't seem to work. And that's again the kind of thing that, you know, when you have a complete lack of empathy, which is what we see here. We have a complete lack of empathy for people. That's what we end up with, and that's where danger starts.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I think that's also where people, many people drew the line. I mean, you know, folks who want a strong border, they don't want people waltzing across. They're worried when the president raises the specter of an Al-Qaeda terrorist sneaking into Mexico and then sneaking over the border, you know. But you know, people who were alarmed at the prospect of that, when they saw those kids crying and they saw and they heard about the families being separated, that was too much. Yeah. And I think that, again, you know, that's the sort of thing that is going to hurt the president. And I do think that the Cohen Manafort guilty plea and conviction, respectively, are going to really they're going to take a toll on the president and perhaps on Republicans this fall.
Speaking of immigration,
hold on one second. Can I just stop you right there because we're about to join WGN Radio.
We
here.
We got to reset.
Yeah, in progress. So let's we will do that when that actually does occur. Are we occurring yet?
Is it occurring?
All right, stand by, please.
For the reset.
Stand by for the reset. I'd like to make this seamless, but I really can't make it seamless.
Difficult to do. We don't know exactly when it happens.
It's not an exact second that this actually occurs on. And stand by, please. Stand by. Affiliates down the line.
I think it's coming.
Ted Koppel used to say, I'd like to tell the affiliates we're going to be going a little late tonight. So that's what's exactly going to happen. All right, here we go. Stand by. It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. And we want to thank everybody who's been listening to us on the World Wide Web in advance of this. We started at 3 o'clock today. We're talking to Mike Flannery right now about this new Marist poll that came out. Mike Flannery, of course, you know, from Fox 32. He is perhaps the most erudite and astute political commentator in our fair city.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'll take that, perhaps.
Yes, you'll take that. And I will say perhaps so that all the other people don't get mad at me. This is really interesting because Bruce Rauner has a 16-point deficit to J.B. Pritzker in this poll of likely voters, and yet Donald Trump has a higher approval rating than Bruce Rauner in the state of Illinois. Please explain.
Well, you know, the governor doesn't have much to run on. I mean, it's not really clear what he has, what his main achievements are. They are mostly negative when you press him on things. I think it reflects a troubled 4-year term.
You know, you saw former President Obama come out with his first video endorsement of the midterms for J.B. Pritzker recently, and it's interesting because he certainly seems to have Democrats on his side, which you would expect. But then when you look at these numbers from this new Marist poll, the Bruce Rauner does not necessarily have the entire support of his party, with 9% of Republicans saying they would today vote for J.B. Pritzker. What do you make of that?
Well, and maybe even more of a threat is... you know, there's a Republican state senator, veteran lawmaker from the greater Springfield area, Central Illinois area, Sam McCann, who's running on the ticket of the Constitution Party for governor. He's getting 4% in this survey. The Libertarian's getting 6%, even though he's kind of an eccentric guy. And Rauner's at 30% with really a fairly small amount of undecided, only 13% undecided. You know, he barely won. He barely scraped by in the Republican primary. It was like 51-52%. Jeannie Ives spending a lot less money than he did, starting very late in the game. He just barely eked out a win at the finish line there. So, you know, he's got a lot of problems, the governor, and he came into office with a very ambitious turnaround agenda, he was able to get almost none of it enacted into law. There was a long 2-year plus budget standoff that did a lot of damage to some of the social service programs and the safety net. And what was the payoff for it? You know, so far, what the governor's saying is, elect me and there will be a payoff in the second term. I'll get these things done. Obviously, a lot of voters are skeptical.
Yeah.
Well, there's more than just that, though, because I want to know why it is that Donald Trump is popular and Bruce Rauner is not. This isn't about policy.
Well, I think there's about a 4 percentage point difference, right? I mean, I think it's within the margin of error. So you're talking
it's
about
pretty close, though. I mean, that, I mean,
surprising
should,
though, isn't it?
I mean, why is Donald Trump? Let's just assume he's outperforming slightly. Bruce Rauner. I mean, in terms of policy, with the exception of the abortion thing, right? I mean, that may be the difference. when Bruce Rauner signed that piece of legislation that makes Illinois, in case Roe versus Wade does get overturned by the Supreme Court, it makes Illinois a pro-choice state. Right, so that,
right.
I mean, theoretically, depending on how they overturn it, but I'm assuming that that's, you know, if it goes back to the states, Illinois would be a pro-choice state. So,
right.
The question is that the differential, or are there other things? Are people just like Donald Trump's personality better? Is his style of politics better than Bruce Rauner's, who's, you know, he's playing the gentleman farmer slash billionaire?
Yeah, I think that you know, Rauner spends a lot of time. You know, you can't escape Donald Trump. Almost every day, he's got something to say. Either he's on Twitter or somewhere. The governor, you know, has gone for long stretches without, certainly here in the Chicago area, without saying much publicly. You know, he probably has held a news conference a couple times a month, where he's, you know, fielded questions from
He probably does need to get out more than he has gotten out, but at the same time, you know, all these, especially Republicans, who are like, they don't understand Donald Trump very much, but they do understand that he's drawing a lot of attention to Republicans, for better or for worse.
Yeah.
I hope people don't want to emulate that style.
And it's a blue state. I mean, that's, you know...
I mean, but Bruce Rauner won. I mean, how blue could the state be?
He did, but, you know, he was running against a guy who had raised the income tax, and he ran a campaign saying, I'm gonna roll it back. Well, what happened there? It's just about, you know, it was at 5% when he was elected, and now it's at 4.95%. Now he says, well, I vetoed that budget that had the tax increase, but there it is. It's still, it's essentially at the same rate.
But he's also running against a guy right now who's promising to raise your taxes if you are,
if you're
rich, but a lot of middle-class people, especially middle-class Republicans, perceive themselves to be middle-class, and yet they may be perceived to be rich. And then they're like, why am I paying more taxes?
Why am I taxing?
And the people
up?
Who aren't working are getting my money.
Well, that's the issue I think I'd like to ask you, because Pritzker, J.B. Pritzker does believe in a graduated income tax, which to some people sounds fair. Other people, I don't even know who's in what bracket, because he hasn't defined that. And he also promises a budget that has a lot of spending promises built in, but we haven't gotten details. And when he's running this far ahead, does he have to explain the details?
I think in a sense, you're answering your own question. Because, you know, look at this. If Rauner were a better politician, I think this argument would be gaining traction. You know, for whatever reason, he doesn't seem to know how to play this game very well. You know, he's a guy who this is his first term. He was a guy who started at the top. He's one of he follows in this long line of these super rich guys who come into politics, and they have contempt for people who've spent their lives in government. They have contempt for them, and they dismiss the advice. I mean, I can't tell you the number of Republican officials who tell, you know, I told him not to do this, or I told him to do this. And I think if the governor had listened to some of those Republicans, he'd be in a much stronger position as he tries to run for reelection. He's one of the weakest candidates for reelection that I've ever seen, ever.
That says something.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it does not appear that as we sit here at the end of August, I hate to say that, but we are at the end of August. It appears that Bruce Rauner has his work cut out for him if he's going to make a real run here.
I mean, you saw Krista McQuarrie's column in the Tribune this week. She supports the governor's policies. She's a Tribune editorial page editorial board member. She's written many of the editorials that strongly support the governor's positions. But, you know, she's the one who she wrote in her column, wow, buckle your seatbelts, Republicans. You're headed for a fall. You know, she doesn't seem to hold out much hope for the governor's reelection, and she also fears that even downstate, some of the seats in the House and the Senate that the Illinois Republican Party has fought so hard to win and has won in the last few elections, so that could all be lost in a giant blue wave, which she sees coming.
Mike Flannery, Fox 32. Flannery is on fire.
Thanks, Mike.
He's got his new show, Flannery's Pants on Fire. It's Fridays, Friday nights at 9:30,
it's a great
and then
show, by
see
the way.
It again on Sunday morning. Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. There he goes, Mike Flannery. The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 7:20 on 7:20 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Judy Pilak has the news at 5 o'clock. It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN.
Yes. Music is improving today on the program. You listened on the stream earlier. I don't know.
Well, not you don't sure hear that music on the stream that we complain about. No. You hear commercials.
I saw some texters comment on music.
Well,
so
I think some people do. Depends on the format or the platform
you're listening
you're using.
Via your smart speaker like or online or through your app or...
Oh,
all the somebody was hearing.
You got iTunes. You got the WGN radio app.
Let's not relive this. I have PTSD from this, and I can't.
It's in
I
the
can't
brain for sure.
Yeah,
it's planted there.
I can't go on. Anyway, when the White Sox are on between 3 and 7 p.m., the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis continues on the stream. So whether you listen to us on WGNRadio.com or you listen to us on the WGN mobile app. Which we suggest, it's pretty great. Or you want to listen to us on iHeart or TuneIn or any of those other platforms. Or you just scream at your smart speaker. Play WGN Radio. They'll figure it out.
I like to scream at my smart speaker. She doesn't always listen if you don't scream.
Why is it always a she? Why can't I get a guy?
I don't know. Maybe
it's
you can change it.
2018, that's sexist, Anna.
Yeah.
Well, mine is a female. She
that's
is.
Sexist.
Did Asia Argento sleep with my smart speaker?
Please. Why you got to bring that up, bro? Oh. Did you see the naked picture of her in bed with him?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, I did.
All right.
Yeah. I have thoughts on that, by the way. We'll do that at 6 o'clock,
we
I
should.
Think, right? Because I'm not sure exactly what... I'm kind of team Asia Argento here.
I thought it was Asia, but yes.
Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to be on our team. But I got it. But I mean, this is... I think we've gone a little too far here. Because the 17-year-old boy does not seem to be completely, oh, my God, I was so taken advantage of. No, he wasn't.
He was so like, hey, pay me or else I'll make this public.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it is ironic.
Oh,
yes.
True. There's a, that's
mean,
true.
That is
she was insane. One of the faces of the Me Too movement. And
one of the
very
first
loud,
people
bold
to come.
People.
Mm-hmm.
Save it. Save it.
All right.
Save
I got to get through this. Wait, we are on the air.
I know. I'm just saying the Rokan line. Anytime we're off air and we're talking about something, save it for the air, people.
Save it.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five. Let's go. Four, 3, 2, 1.
Now it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis, sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right, here we go. Checking in at.
Number five.
All right. The president launched an attack on NFL players last night when he was speaking at a rally in West Virginia. He criticized ESPN for what he says was their decision to now stop broadcasting the national anthem.
And unlike the NFL, you always honor and cherish our great American flag. It was just announced by ESPN that rather than defending our anthem, our beautiful, beautiful national anthem, and defending our flag, they've decided that they just won't broadcast when they play the national anthem. We don't like that. So while the players are kneeling, some of them, not all of them at all, you're all proudly standing for our national anthem. Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. It's like a Miss America, like a Miss USA speech is what he just gave since he owned Miss USA. Thank you. I will sit down now. Hope that the pageant judges choose me. Listen, two things here. Two very, very important things. One, ESPN did not announce it will no longer play the national anthem. It has a policy of, it has had a longstanding policy, as most networks do, of not playing the national anthem. They run spots, they run commercials during the national anthem, unless it's a particularly important national anthem for a game, like It's Veterans Day.
Thanksgiving during the playoffs. That's for Fox Sports' approach, but CBS says it really never has, and ESPN says it rarely does broadcast.
They did three times last year. That's all it normally is each year.
Right, and they said that they don't have any plans to change that.
That's right.
But this has been taken out of context, and the president's using this now to make it seem like, you know, it's all bad. And why does he want it? Why is he trying to ruin the football season for me?
Can't I just eat a bowl of chili and watch football?
Have they decided what they're doing yet in Columbus, Ohio? Yet?
No, that's going on right now, bro. I'll keep you posted.
Thank you.
What are we waiting on
We're waiting on whether or not Coach Urban Meyer is going to return to Ohio State University.
Okay.
Big meeting today. Board of Trustees, President, Athletic Director.
Will Roquan Smith play in the next Bears game, too? I'm also anxious to hear that.
It's a good question. We'll see if he practices tonight at Vernon Hills.
Yeah, because he was a little hurt, right?
He's got a little hammy tightness.
Oh,
the tight hammy already?
See, and this is the thing. And now I don't want to have a fight every time I'm watching the NFL football because, how can you watch that? Hey, those people! You know, I mean, I don't want to have something to divide families.
Can you
just please give me something I can enjoy? I do not have to take a political position on everything in my life.
Sports used to be an outlet.
It did.
Good old days.
Well, hey, all of you and all your liberal friends. It's like, shut up.
Can't we just get along?
Now, Trump has since sent an email to his supporters announcing that he is starting a petition to get the Star Spangled Banner back on TV. It was never on TV! When you would see the video of the guys kneeling, you were seeing it on the news afterwards.
Right. It was making news, and so they showed that video that did not air during the broadcast.
Okay. You want me to read this to you?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Just after we heard a sitting governor trash America, ESPN has now decided we'll no longer play the national anthem before Monday Night Football. If America is too offensive for anyone in our country, then what are we doing in America? I'm calling on you to join me in denouncing this spineless surrender to the politically correct liberal mob. I was the first person to sign this petition. Now I need you to follow my lead and be the second.
Oh, boy.
That's what he's saying now. Is there a donate button with that, too?
There's ads popping up to buy his hats and
just play
donate.
The game. Throw the ball. Come on.
Now, this is a very nice distraction from this question today from his friends at Fox & Friends.
The press. Is the press the enemy of the people?
No, not at all. But the fake news is. And the fake news is comprised of, it's a big chunk, okay? Somebody said, what's the chunk? I said, 80%? It's a lot. If I do something well, it's not reported. Other than in the 20%. I mean, the New York Times cannot write a good story about me. They're crazed. They're like lunatics.
Okay. Okay.
But just as he normally does, when he sits down with his friendly interviewers, he tends to say the biggest things that get him in trouble, as he did on Fox and Friends this morning.
Can we play that now?
Let's hear that.
Can we play that on Fox and Friends today?
Mm-hmm.
When they asked him this.
Did you know about payments?
Later on I knew. Later on. But you have to understand, Ainsley, what he did. And they weren't taken out of campaign finance. That's a big thing. That's a much bigger thing. Did they come out of the campaign? They didn't come out of the campaign. They came from me, and I tweeted about it. You know, I don't know if you know, but I tweeted about the payments. But they didn't come out of campaign. In fact, my first question when I heard about it was, did they come out of the campaign? Because that could be a little dicey. And they didn't come out of the campaign, and that's big. But they weren't, it's not even a campaign violation. If you look at President Obama, he had a massive
campaign violation.
But he had a different attorney general.
Yeah.
And they viewed it a lot different.
Yeah. Okay. What was that? I'd like a little detail now. They've been asking the White House for detail, and they don't have.
They're not getting exactly what that is. The detail.
But he likes to throw that out there. He's wrong. He just admitted that he did know about this payment. Because now the question is, did he direct the payment? And is there proof that he directed the payment? And it doesn't matter if it came out of campaign finance. That would be technically a campaign violation and against the criminal statute, U.S. code. So there is a problem there. He has just acknowledged that he knew about it. Did he direct it? And this now adds more. This would have been just something he, I mean, she asked him.
Right.
I mean, you know, bless Fox and Friends for you know, going there, because I kind of wouldn't have not have expected them to ask him a question that he would have to answer.
Well, that's why I think he just gets very comfortable and he'll say things without thinking about it, because the ethics lawyers are saying that if you knowingly omitted the debt from your financial disclosure report, which if he knew about it and he omitted it, it was omitted, then that's another problem that you sort of stepped into.
Okay. Checking in at
number four.
So why exactly has Lanny Davis, the attorney for Michael Cohen, been all over TV and radio today? These hours after his client accepted a deal to plead guilty on 8 counts, you'd think, don't you want to go home and rest for more? Nope. The answer was clearly in focus when he talked to Megyn Kelly today, whose show I did not realize is still on television, as he made a direct appeal to the viewers to give money to Cohen to pay his bills.
I would say the reaction of your audience may be that they're not as interested in getting the truth out about Donald Trump as many other people in the country. Approximately 60% of the country would not have the reaction of your audience.
Okay. By the way, I overstated it. It's 20,000. It's not 70,000. But, you know, for Cohen's, hope springs eternal, I guess.
And they're talking about how much money is in this Michael Cohen defense fund.
Right. Because they laughed when he said, well, if you really care, then, you know, you send the money to MichaelCohenTruth.com.
All right. Wait, hold on. Listen to this.
Could I just take one opportunity to remind everyone that Michael Cohen has suffered a tragic and difficult experience with his family. He's without resources. And we've set up a website called MichaelCohenTruth.com.
Oh, hell no!
That we're hoping that he will get some help from the American people so he can continue to tell the truth.
Oh, hell no!
The audience is, but they don't know if you're ready to donate, Lanny, but we did check before we went to air. It's got $70,000 in it so far. And listen, we appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, but now that if you go on MichaelCohenTruth.com, it'll send you to DonaldJTrump.com, like a campaign website. I don't know if they had locked...
Because it's MichaelCohenTruthFund.com.
It's not what he was saying it was on the air. If you look at the stories about
it... He said what was wrong. What he said was wrong. And so the Donald Trump people figured that out immediately.
So they were
capitalizing
on that.
He had the wrong thing, so they
capitalized
on it.
He's up to 113 grand, by the way.
Right. The one that Donald Trump is now running is probably up to $500,000.
Right.
So it was pretty good. I mean, it was a good dirty trick by the Trump campaign to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe the White House. I'm not sure who did it. But it sends it, if because Lanny Davis, like a lot of older people, they never get their URL right. Or their urination, for that matter. He made a mistake on the URL, and you know, those are fast and loose players over there at the lithe players, I should say, over at the Trump campaign.
And they jumped on it for sure, because that domain definitely reroutes you to DonaldJTrump.com.
Yes. So, but I mean, who wants to go? Michael Cohen is a despicable human being. He was when he was telling us that we were all going to have to, you know, that Donald Trump's going to, he's going to fix you.
That's right.
You know, all I mean, all that, kind of stuff.
Directed.
And now all of a sudden, all of his toughness and all of that bravado, and he was cheating the whole time.
But isn't he also a multimillionaire? I mean, isn't he lived a pretty lavish lifestyle and had
and this, by the
lived
way,
in the swanky apartment and everything?
Makes Lanny Davis, and last night he was all over MSNBC and CNN and saying, listen, he's got all kinds of stuff here, including Russian connections that he's willing to tell the special counsel. Everything Lanny Davis said last night goes right into a cocked hat for me.
I think you're right. If you had it, why wouldn't you have already offered it up?
I don't know.
Of this whole deal.
But again, I mean, this is just, you know, Donald Trump showed up with this caravan of half-baked crooks. I'm from Chicago. I know a caravan of half-baked crooks. I can smell these guys. I knew exactly who he was showing up with. This is a New York version of the guys here I know. I know these people. This I get why people didn't want to elect Hillary Clinton. But the option was this, and this is what we have, and this is not going to end well. I'm not sure Hillary would have ended well. The gates to hell opened when they were the two candidates, and now we are in hell. We need somebody to get us out of hell.
We do.
I'm not sure who that's going to be. It's not going to be Bernie. They just said Bernie in my ear. Not Bernie!
Oh, they said Bernie.
Hmm. Yeah, no.
Okay.
All I know Bernie. Is there is no one left in that swamp.
Right. Actually, the swamp now has a New York accent, which is really kind of interesting.
Yeah, the alligators. Yeah. They talk funny.
Yeah. They moved the New York swamp down to Washington, and now it's going to... And it's like, I mean, come on. Michael Cohen. Oh, poor Michael Cohen can't speak unless you pay him.
I just don't
understand
that. Oh, what
disgusting crap. This whole thing is awful. This is so beneath the United States of America. Who are we going to run? I got to find a guy.
Look around. You never know. Barack Obama came from here.
Oh, I know I'd send a guy from here. I do not want to send a guy from here.
We have enough problems.
And I honestly don't think that America is going to elect another guy from Chicago. But I think that there's got to be somebody. All right, we'll get to your 3, 2, and 1. But first, Violetta, first, Judy, what's coming up at the bottom of the hour?
A guilty verdict in the shooting death of Hydea Pendleton.
Violetta.
Watch Micah and Joe, Micah Mater, and Joe Donlin weeknights on WGN-TV News at 9 o'clock.
All right, here we go. Mm-hmm. Continuing on the top 5, up to...
Number 3.
So why exactly has Ringo Starr been a guest on the October 2nd episode of Dan Rather's hosted Access TV series, The Big Interview? Why?
It's an important day for him today.
Program will be the 100th episode of the talk show. That's why. And will kick off the second half of The Big Interview 6th season. That's why.
Ringo Starr also played his first official show as a Beatle on this day in 1962.
Oh.
A little trivia for you there.
So, Ringo... Dan Rather has this question for you. Why? Why are you a drummer?
People always ask me, oh, what about those drummers and those records? I never listened to the drummer. I listened to the whole thing. And yes, I know the names. But it wasn't like I was listening for the drums. I was listening for the whole feel of the record.
Okay.
Still has that sweet accent. Love that.
That's true. Mm-hmm. He's a Beatle.
Liverpudlian.
That always makes me laugh when I hear that.
You know, it's sort of a strange way. You're from Liverpool, but you're a Liverpudlian.
Mm-hmm.
Number 2.
Some kids receive toys for their 11th birthday, but Downers Grove resident Sophia Sanchez settled for a visit from her favorite rapper, Drake.
Nice.
Instead, this is pretty cool. The Grammy Award-winning artist visited Sophia at the Lurie Children's Hospital, where she is awaiting a heart transplant.
Oh my God!
You asked me to come, I'm here.
So I'm in the Lurie Children's Hospital, and look who came to surprise me.
Just for you, my dear.
Drake. Thank you so much, Drake, for coming to see me. It means a lot for you to come and cheer me up.
Oh, that is so sweet.
I would be afraid for a heart patient, though, right? You want to give her a little warning before you... Hey, somebody, it's going to be very exciting.
Uh-huh.
Let's get this over with quickly.
Don't surprise her too much.
Yeah.
Just sort of, yeah.
Yeah.
Her face,
so
her face lit up, though. Oh, it's
so
adorable.
Sweet. Well, she took part in one of his challenges online, and you know, it's all good.
She's waiting for a heart transplant, too.
Yeah, she said this is one of her first wishes to come true, so...
Good.
Our next is for the transplant.
All right, our wishes for her transplant to go successfully.
A lot of love sending her way.
And finally.
Number 1.
What? We should have asked Lester about this. We had him on the internet show a little bit earlier today. Lester Holt. We'll have to play this next week when he's on.
Yeah, we will.
Was at a barbecue joint in New York City, and with his band, I'm assuming, And we talked to him a couple weeks ago about this. Why do you want to be in a band so bad? So now we get to do an American Idol version of Lester Holt, American News Idol. Let's listen and hear how he does.
When we get in the morning. Sunlight hurts my eyes. Something
sounds like when he's singing? It's like when Barack Obama sings. Right? I mean, like,
you can tell he's enjoying it. Like, he's smiling. Yeah. People are into it. He plays bass. He's a stellar news anchor, but he can sing.
Yeah.
He can sing.
It's kind of a funny thing. It's like the exact same. It's like guys who can carry a tune for sure, but they're going to go, but they also know what their limitations are. They're not going to go, like, over the top. They're going to stay in their box, and they're going to pull this thing off, and they're going to impress everybody because they're on pitch in their box.
Pulled it off.
A lot better than me, pal. A lot better than me. Let's wrap this up.
The top five at five.
Oh, this is one of our favorite guys of all time.
He is.
Mark McKinnon joins us from that TV show, The Circus, Inside the Wildest Political Show on Earth. It returns to Showtime on September 16th, right after Sacha Baron Cohen goes away. And I kind of assume that that's going to be the Sarah Palin episode, is going to be the last episode for Sacha Baron Cohen show. That is a wild, wild, wild experience. And that's just kind of making fun of politics. You actually cover what's really going on, and it is just as scary as what we're seeing on the Sacha Baron Cohen show. I'll just tell you that right now, Mark.
Oh, right. Yeah, it's stranger than fiction. If we pitched this as fiction, they would have thrown us out on our ears. I mean, it's just when you think it couldn't get any wilder, it gets wilder. And, you know, every time we're off the air, you know, people who watch the show just, you know, every day it's like, why aren't you on the air? I want you on the air now. And, you know, obviously we have a budget and our health to consider, but this week I wish we were on. What a week this is.
Yeah. It's crazy. Let me just ask you very quickly before we get into this week, because I know there's a lot to talk about here. But I think the most important episode of the entire arc of what you did was one called From Russia with Love, in which Roger Stone sits down and bloviates about all kinds of, you know, wants to make himself out to be this, you know, master of the dark arts and secret guy, and he's dealing with the Russians, and he's WikiLeaks and all of that, and he doesn't want to really answer any of John Heilman's questions that he's being asked, and they're at the Russian tea room drinking while they're doing it. It's very interesting, and amazingly, people can go see that. That's an amazing episode to see. Now,
There's a bunch of clues in that episode.
Totally.
And Stone says in one sequence, he says, it's not over till we say it's over.
Right.
It's haunting now. And it does seem
like they were calling fire from the Russians to drop things in a timely manner. This is what I saw in October of 2016.
That's right.
I was reading something today about just how connected some different events are to Russian, internet meddling. And one of those was the day that he called on Hillary Clinton, or called on the Russians to check out Hillary Clinton's emails, and that day that happened.
Right. And then at one point, Stone was asked in that episode, so how does the rest of the election go? And he almost predicted it perfectly. Trump does very well in debates. Julian Assange drops the darkest secrets on the Clintons, and the rest is history.
So let me ask you, I don't know if you can answer this question. I mean, I'm sure you know the answer to it, but you are a producer of the show. Did they ask for your raw tape? Did the investigators ask for your raw tape on Roger Stone?
No, they haven't. But the raw tape's out there. I mean, I'm sure, and there's been a lot of discussion about it, so I'm sure they've looked at it.
Yeah, because I wonder if he's going to be indicted before this sort of, gentleman's agreed upon deadline of September 1st. Or the Labor Day after which, you know, until the election, there's going to be sort of not a very public continuation of this investigation.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he's the one person in this whole sort of universe of characters that's almost certain to be indicted. In fact, he says it himself. So it's unclear to me, you know, why that hasn't happened yet. But you know, one thing I've stopped trying to figure out is just exactly what Robert Mueller and his team are doing. They've got their own beat and their own time and their own drummer. And as we saw this week, it's producing results.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Okay. All right. So yesterday, 3 p.m. Central Time. I don't know what time zone you're actually in, but the 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock Central Time, It is one of the most astounding hours I've ever been on the radio. It's just amazing.
One of the most astounding hours in history.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Really. So what did you? What,
either
you,
one of those things would have been significant, but for them both to happen in the same hour was just again.
So what do you make of this? How much worse is Donald Trump off 27 hours later?
Significantly. And part of what I've been saying about this or thinking is that the whole stuff about Russia collusion to me has been a bit of a sideshow. As Trump and his supporters have said, to me, it's like there might be collusion out there somewhere, but if it is, it's probably kind of accidental and stupid as opposed to some sort of, long thought out nefarious plot. Mm-hmm. And if it was done by the Russians and probably not the Trump team. They just maybe walked into some stuff. But stuff I've always believed was much more dangerous was other crimes. I mean, financial crimes, money laundering, a laundry list of other crimes that that Michael Cohen is the door to. And as soon as they, as soon as I heard that they were talking to Michael Cohen, I just thought, oh, my God. Anybody that's been in the New York real estate business. And by the way, here's another theory I have on this. Trump never thought he was going to be president. He was more surprised than anybody that he won. Okay. And I think his whole, he may regret it because I think that his whole plan was he was going to run, get a bunch of attention, as he's good at doing, and then go back to the real estate business. And I know for a fact he was planning on endorsing Chris Christie for president. He sort of walked into this thing backwards and, I think of all the potential things that could be out there for anybody involved in real estate, much less Donald Trump. And we think it's any accident that he hasn't, or that his taxes are really being audited and really takes this long. That's why we haven't seen him.
I want to ask you about the Republican reaction to all of this, because I know you've advised candidates at the very highest level of government, the Bushes and Republicans at that.
John McCain.
And, you think about now Republicans are not getting in front of the camera right now. It's very difficult to have anyone speak out. And it sort of feels as if, is that the right move, would you say? Is that how you'd advise them?
Well, what's clear to me now is that that the Democrats have a really clear message now. That's not so much specifically impeachment, although they can kind of get there now, but more specifically a culture of corruption, because they've got a laundry list now of between Manafort and the list of indictments, guilty pleas is astonishing. And that's just from what we know right now. And so I think that, it reminds me very much of the Bush campaign. And if Democrats are smart, they'll look at that, because we didn't really run against Al Gore. We ran against Bill Clinton and the corruption in the White House.
Right.
And our whole message was we're running to restore dignity and honor to the White House. And that was really the message. And so I think that, I'm reminded so much of, especially seeing Lanny Davis on TV now, who was Clinton's lawyer, and there he is again.
Mm-hmm.
So we're having all kinds of flashbacks here, but that's where the Republicans are really going to get in trouble now. And I've said all along that I thought the economy could be ballast for survival, but this is, yesterday was a pretty heavy straw on the camel's back.
Yeah, the only issue is that Democrats, first of all, because of the whole Clinton thing, it's a very hard argument for them to make. And now that Lanny Davis is out trying to monetize cooperation with Michael Cohen by saying, pay money to his website and he'll tell more stuff, like it's a carnival, it's sort of like it's a little weird.
It's totally weird.
And I don't think that Democrats are really in a position to take advantage of this. I do wonder if there are Republicans who can fear breaking away, because you do have, as you point out, not only do you have the people in the Trump universe, you also have this Collins guy in New York. You've got now Duncan Hunter out in California. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a cavalierness to what's going on here that the kind of it flows downhill from Donald Trump, which is, don't worry about it. We're right all the time and we can do whatever we want. And there does seem to be a little bit of that, power corrupting notion here.
Yeah. And that's the real danger, I think, for Trump and his brand is that, the reason he's gotten away with so much so far to date and the reason that the base tolerates it is because no matter, even on stuff they sort of disagree with, Trump has been a change agent. I mean, he's shaking things up, doing things differently, and people may disagree with it, but most people who voted for Trump just wanted him to do that. They just wanted to be the bull in the china shop and go break stuff,
yeah.
Which he's done really well. But if they start to sense that they have become they, meaning Trump broadly writ as the establishment, now governing in Washington, if rather than draining the swamp, they're filling it, that could be really problematic. I mean, because that's really counter-brand, counter what people expected from Trump.
Right.
And it's starting to add up. And, you know, just, I mean, like you said, just the last 24 hours with the 1 hour yesterday, but also the stuff about Duncan Hunter and all these other Republican allies of Donald Trump.
So you think the political fallout will be worse for him than the legal fallout? Or would you not say that?
Yeah. Yes, I do. I mean, the legal, there's lots of sort of pathways down the legal course, but ultimately it's political. And, you know, I think that's why he's been playing such a strong political game. He's trying to play the Clinton game, which is, you know, which is beat it in the Senate.
Yeah.
Beat it in the Senate. Just hang on to enough Republican senators in the Senate.
Right.
So that you have 17 that don't go south and give them a 2/3 vote in the Senate for impeachment.
It is. All right. So I will leave you with this question. Is there hope? Because, I mean, I think you and I see the world in a lot of the same ways. And I do wonder, you know, I would like a strong, branded, compassionate human being to be the, and when I mean compassion, I mean weak. I mean somebody who, you know, shows empathy and represents America as a theoretical solution to the world's problems, as opposed to just another problem that the world has to deal with, so that people have to run away from or run to, you know. And
yeah.
We seem to be a magnet now for, for all kinds of criticism on the global stage, and China gets to take advantage of that, and Russia, who obviously is trying to stir it up, so that we will be, and Iran and all of our strategic enemies or adversaries, you know, can win here. But internally, we're turning on each other, and I keep going to this notion that this isn't America first. This is be an American first. And I wonder if there's a Republican who can try to jump in here and not only save the American brand, but save the party and save, I guess, the party first, then the American brand. Is it possible? I mean, I like a Kasich type guy, because obviously he's out there in the hustings waiting for this, or somebody else that you see?
You know, well, I mean, there's the kind of the usual list of characters, including Lindsey Graham, Jeff Flake, John Kasich, the Tennessee senator,
Corker.
Yeah, I think that,
do they have a shot in the new Republican Party? Is my question.
No, but I think they could start a new Republican Party, and my theory is that what happens in 2020 is that kind of no matter what, Trump will run for re-election just because it's not in his DNA to quit
right.
and be a loser. But under that scenario, I think no matter what happens on the investigation side, I think he wins the Republican primary pretty easily, which means that somebody like a Flake or a Corker or a Kasich will go run as an independent to create the new / old Republican Party
yeah.
that we remember, and run as an independent and just rebuild it.
Maybe we get him to rebrand as Trump. The Trump Party. Maybe if we get him to rebrand.
Well, that's what it's become. I mean, it is the Trump Party. I mean, it's so different than the Republican Party that I joined in so many different ways. But under that scenario, I think you could, particularly if a progressive Democrat is elected, which I think is highly possible given the physics of the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. So if you had that Trump and an independent kind of Republican establishment type, you could see an outcome that is like 30-30-30.
Yeah, but electorally it becomes very messy there. We'll see.
Yeah, it does.
We'll see.
But listen, I know, and I won't name names, but I know there are Republicans thinking about running only to take out Trump, and they'd be just as happy to help elect a Democrat.
Yeah, I can. I think some of them even said so. All right, Mark, thank you so much. As always, the circus.
As always, you guys. You guys are super smart on all this stuff, and it's always fun to talk to you.
We're looking forward to the circus.
Return awesome. September 16th to Showtime. I'm there. I'm already.
Me too.
I've already ordered it on my queue. I'm ready.
I got friends watching
the popcorn. I'm gonna do jumping jacks during the whole thing. All right, thank you, man. I appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, Mark.
All right.
Kick it hard. See
you. They kick it hard. Back to you. Let's talk now with Judy. What's coming up in a few minutes? Top of the hour.
Getting in a good nap when flying the friendly skies.
Violetta's traffic being brought to you by the Illinois Department of Transportation. Work zones in Illinois roadways are becoming far too dangerous. Irresponsible driving, making conditions unsafe for both travelers and workers. We're all responsible. You can make a difference. Visit lifeordeathillinois.com. WGN. And a number of things we'd like to get to coming up in these next few minutes. And then Ryan Dempster joins us after 6:40 tonight. He's going to be in studio talking about a special event that he's going to be doing at the Vic Theater. Proceeds going to CPS Score, an after-school program for Chicago Public Schools. So it's a very worthwhile endeavor. We want to thank Demp for doing that, and we'll thank him in person when he is here. And we also have Blackhawks tickets, regular season Blackhawks tickets, to a pair of tickets to a regular season game, which you will choose with the Blackhawks. Cool. How about that?
You get to choose.
Yeah.
Anything you want.
That's a pretty cool item right there.
An e-game.
Single game tickets now available at ChicagoBlackhawks.com. I think there might be two. I think it's got to be a home game, and it's got to be at the United Center. I know what you're wondering. Notre Dame?
No, first? Not that one. Just like original. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
It is.
Yes.
It's awesome.
You know?
Yeah. Yes. Exactly.
Those Notre Dame, go on sale the 28th, by the way. That was just announced today.
Yeah. That's a separate deal. NHL controls those tickets. Blackhawks control their own tickets. They can work it out with you. You know, there's a couple games. If you could choose one Blackhawks game, for me, it's Detroit.
Detroit sucks.
Yes, because I want to say Detroit sucks.
Mm-hmm. I like hearing Anna say Detroit sucks.
I know.
Can't hear that coming out of her mouth.
I've heard it many times at Blackhawks games, especially back in the day.
Even when they're not playing
each other.
Right.
Yeah, even when they're not playing.
Isn't
that funny?
It's like when you leave Soldier Field after a win and like the Redskins are in town and you just hear Packers suck chants as you walk out.
I know. It's like, even if you lose and get slaughtered, they still are like, you know.
There's some drunk guy in the bathroom starting that chant.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Anyway, point is that's what's happening. All right. I got a couple of things. I mentioned I was going to bring this up. This Asia Argento story.
Mm-hmm.
I like to call her Asia because that's what her parents called her, unless she made the whole thing up.
Yeah.
Ex
of Anthony Bourdain, we should say.
Yes. And she has this situation where she betted a co-star back in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And the co-star was 17, and in California, she did apparently in California, they done betted, and in California, the age of consent is 18.
That's a problem.
Yeah, and the
She was 37,
and she was 37 at the time, and it does seem to me. And they've got pictures now. This picture came out. TMZ's got it of them. She's like asleep, and he apparently is taking the picture.
She's topless. And they both appear to be naked.
Yes. Maybe they were just watching a movie.
Mm-hmm. Not with that blush on their face.
Is that Netflix and chill? Is that what that looks like?
Yeah, sure.
Just want to make sure we understand.
She seems to be drifting off into a post-coital slumber right there, as they like to write as a stage direction.
Well, we should give the background. She was one of the actresses who came out first against Harvey Weinstein and said that he raped her when she was 21 years old and was very vocal and big part of the early Me Too movement.
Right. I think that this whole moment is... this whole moment is rife with moment. There are true aggressors and bad people in this moment that have done the wrong thing. There's no question about it.
No question.
No question.
And I think
Harvey Weinstein,
he's in that category.
Is clearly in that category. But this, like a lot of human behavior, especially human sexual behavior, is on a continuum. There are actual differences, not everybody who did one thing did it in an aggressive, rapey way.
I agree with you.
And I think that there are some consensual things that when later were then recontextualized or monetized. for monetary, obviously, or professional advancement. And that's the part that gets me. And what this kid did in asking her for $380,000 by later saying, I needed the money. My career was impacted by you. And she and Anthony Bourdain at the time did not want the requisite publicity to go bad.
They did not.
On Asia Argento or on Anthony Bourdain. So they paid because they assumed that he had a lot of money. She does, apparently doesn't have a ton of money. And he didn't either.
He had originally asked for $3.5 million, this 17-year-old, and they gave him $425,000, which the New York Times in their very detailed article said that was about 20% of his net worth at the time. Try to make it go away.
The part, though, that gets me is if they had met when he was 17, that makes sense. Asia and him had starred in a movie together in 2003 when he was 7. They were co-stars.
Okay.
And she was his foster mom in the movie. It's called The Heart of Deceit. So she's known him since he was 7 years old. That's the part that kind of gets me. I mean, they were co-stars in 2003. They meet up again, I don't know how, in another movie when he's 17. It just seems like they have a history.
It's creepy because it was too young when they met.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is creepy. That part is, there's no question that's creepy, but there does seem to be a very consensual moment here between them.
Yeah, but he was influenced by her since the age of 7.
But then the other piece of that is in text messages to her friend, she said he told her right before this, I'm his sexual fantasy since the age of 12, and that he got on top of her. So it sort of feels as if she said, and then she also said she didn't know he was 17 at the time. She knew he was young, but didn't know he was 17.
Mm. So wacky.
It is wacky.
Yeah.
And it just feels like her being such a, you know, such a, the face, one of the faces of the Me Too movement. This is tough because then you read things that are contradictory in her text messages to a friend to try to cover it up.
Very hypocritical based on her platform. And also, it's because he's a guy and she's a girl. The roles are reversed here, and we would feel differently, I think, if that was a young woman and an older guy.
Oh, if that was reversed, that guy would, everything would be over for that guy.
So that's the part here I don't really get. I mean, I still find this whole situation
Is it over
disturbing.
For her, though?
And
was it ever on for her? I mean, that's, I guess, the question. Was Asia Argento really that much of an important player in Hollywood? Now, she would make the argument that she would have been a more important player had Harvey Weinstein not tried to crush her career after she claims he raped her.
Right, but even if it had nothing to do with a career, this young boy could have been traumatized since the age of 7 and taken advantage of at the age of 17. So, I mean, it's
but
a
he's
child.
Not alleging that. He's not alleging that that she took advantage of him when he was 7.
No, but I'm saying that
there's a difference there.
There is definitely a difference there, but 17.
He's claiming he had a crush on her at the age of 12, and then, you know, at a point sort of that testosterone awakening that happens in adolescence, and then from that point forward, he was into her, and then the next thing you know, they're in bed and they're taking this picture, and it is, the great irony is that it has come out that you know she was a part of this Me Too thing. Does that, I guess the question is twofold. Mm-hmm. Does it disqualify her as a Me Too person? And does it mean that, obviously we know that the roles were reversed, it would be different here, boy-girl thing. We get that. Is that a totally fair thing? Because I'm sure there are some women, you know, under the, you know, but 15, 16, 17, not 15, but 16, 17, 18, that may have also tried to work their way into a better job. You know, they shouldn't have, and the guys shouldn't have gone along with it for without question. But that's one of those things that is, you know, why would we say it's okay for the 17-year-old boy and not for the 17-year-old girl?
Well, I mean, I think in those jobs that they're going for, often they end up succumbing to things that are not necessarily consensual. And that's certainly what you saw with some of these producer types. And it's a very different category. What you talk about on the continuum, that's on the other part, the other side.
But there's a middle part of the continuum in which the aggressor is the woman, too.
I'm not sure she was an aggressor here. I didn't like the stuff where she kind of did this sort of Weinstein-esque cover-up where she got a public private investigator on him. She claims to a friend she has 80 pages on him. Anthony Bourdain hired him, pays him off, you know, lies about it, kind of covers it up.
She also claims that she never had sex with him. And then in text messages says she has. So
yeah, well, there's also the picture. The picture is pretty, I don't know.
And this happened after her attack. I mean, so she was 37. She was supposedly abused by Weinstein at 22. So this was, I think it's sort of so hypocritical. I can't even believe it.
I think it sort of lessens her ability to speak out for sure on the Me Too situation. And it's illegal, so there could be charges.
Right. Right. That in California, that sort of surprises me that 18 is the age of consent in California.
I wonder how many.
It seems like they changed that recently for other reasons. I don't know, but it's like because I don't think in Illinois it is. I think 16 is the age. Is it 16 or 17 in Illinois? Can we look that up?
I thought it was 17.
I think it's 17.
17.
17 in Illinois.
If 16, if you're the other significant other is within 2 years, I think it is.
Oh, boy. Anyway, I don't know. I had no idea who this woman was until Anthony Bourdain took his own life. And now we know it. We know way too much.
We know a lot.
All right. And we got nowhere on that.
Well, it's hard. It's a hard one. It's a hard one to crack because you don't know. I mean, it's hard to understand exactly what happened there. Was he being the aggressor? Was she?
But does, I guess the question is, to me, the one thing that pounds in my brain right now is, does the who's being the aggressor matter?
If she thinks he's of age and he's coming on to her, that could be her defense, right? I suppose. And I understand that if you had it reversed and there was a man involved, you might say, well, you should have checked it out. I think
we're giving her a break because she's a woman and she's part of the Me Too movement. That's why she's getting a break on it.
Should she go to jail?
Should she be held accountable for her actions? Yes.
All right. Violetta's putting her in jail. All right. Thank you very much.
She goes to jail.
Going to jail.
Okay.
Is your Argento? Jail for you. We've decided just to be the judge, jury, and executioner of all people in America for whatever they're doing.
We got it all figured out.
Someone's got to be the voice of reason.
Better us than someone else is what I'm going to say, because we have no power to do anything. But in this case, Asia Argento, you're going to jail.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you.
Case closed.
The court has spoken. Mm-hmm. In the next case, we'll actually do something. We'll do some good for Chicago coming up on the other side.
I like that.
But first, let's check in with Judy.
And now the real news. Honolulu is shutting down.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Violetta. All right, here he is, Ryan Dempster. Speaking of hockey,
hey, Ryan.
He's a Canadian by birth.
Yes.
Hockey fan by insemination or something. I don't know, whatever happens there.
Because he's Canadian.
We were just talking a little bit about hockey and all this. And even though you grew up in Canada, you know, you became an instant fan of the Chicago Blackhawks here, right?
Yeah, just a tie, I think, more to the guys and the city itself. Being a player that plays here and playing a professional sport here, you start to root for the other guys because you see how happy everybody is when everybody's playing well. And then to meet a lot of these guys, a lot of them came from Canada and then came from British Columbia, guys like Seabrook and Duncan Keith. And so there became this kind of instant attachment. And then my passion for rooting for them and John McDonough, the president, and Jay Blunk, and all these people go over there and have all the success. And it's super awesome to see the kind of the dynasty that they went through and then watch them try and get back there again. So this is a lot of fun.
Yeah,
it really is. They're the best.
As a baseball star in Canada, when you go back home to Canada, and you go back up to see family or friends or whatever it is in Vancouver, do they even understand the baseball? I mean, it's like a totally different deal.
They do. I think where I'm from, for sure, we're right on the water, so we played a lot more baseball than the rest of Canada. But it is pretty overwhelming, I think, at times. I remember, family members coming down and seeing things and like, whoa, this is incredible.
Yeah.
But that's one nice part about throughout my career. I've been able to kind of share that with my family. My brothers and my dad have almost been like teammates. And the parade stopped a long time ago. The first couple of years, there was a small parade that ran through my town. But
nice.
it was really, really special to come from a small town in Canada and to make it in Major League Baseball.
You know, to me, one of the most interesting stories, I think most even Cubs fans don't realize this, but Fergie Jenkins is Canadian, and he started as a hockey player, And there was literally a guy at hockey practice who said to him, have you ever thrown a baseball before? and Fergie looked at him and was like, I don't know, I guess I could try. And the next thing you know, right, he goes on to be this legendary baseball player, legendary MLB player and legendary Chicago Cub. And it is just, it is an interesting thing because he worked with these guys and it was, through a little league system in Canada. He's from Southern Ontario, right? But it was again, people weren't really looking at the kids up there. And then all of a sudden, stars like you and like Fergie come through.
Down here.
It's really amazing.
The evolution of the game is, in that way, has definitely changed. Like when I was a kid, we had scouts, but the way scouting is nowadays, you hear about people throwing in, Saudi Arabia to Brazil to everywhere.
Right.
Everybody knows about everybody, and it's hard to find that diamond in the rough, that Fergie Jenkins story nowadays because of that. But it just also shows you that you don't have to play baseball all year round from the time you're like 8 to 12 years old to be a successful major leaguer. You can just kind of play other sports or work on a farm like Fergie did and, round up cows. And he's a cowboy from Chatham, Ontario with his cowboy hat.
It's an incredible story.
Yeah. Oh, he's
amazing. Told us on the air that whole story. Yeah. I just could have listened to it for hours. Did you have scouts that actually came to see you, or did you have to sort of like make a fuss or something and say,
no,
hey, check this guy out?
It started out with the bird dog. We had this guy, Don Cherry, bird dog for, they call him a bird dog, and he did that for the Texas Rangers. And so then he makes a phone call to a scout, and then that scout came over, and then another little scout, and then word starts getting out. And funny story, I was playing at Ambleside Park in West Vancouver, where we played all our home games, and I'm getting ready to go out there and pitch, and at this point I'm getting ready to get drafted, and there's like probably 20 scouts in the stands, and they all have their radar guns, which I think is interesting. I mean, is there 20 different radar gun stores? Because, like, do you not just trust the guy to your right that it says 93?
You're
like,
right.
Well, you
DMV
never know.
20.
But he may know what the calibration is, right? He knows to add. He knows what to add. He goes, oh, no, this kid's only throwing 62. I swear to God.
So then my uncle decides that it's a really good idea because he knew this was going to happen. He brought a blow dryer. And he stood in the middle of the crowd. And he's got a picture of him holding the blow dryer while I'm pitching. So, pretty funny stuff.
Well, you are funny. I mean, you did a stand up comedy at like Paris Club back in like months ago, but you had to fill in for Jeff Garland, who was out at the last minute, and everybody said you were hilarious. Does that just kind of run in the family, or where did that come from?
Yeah, I think it definitely runs in the family. Dinners at our house were pretty interesting. My dad was always a believer in the power of a positive mental attitude, and always like to keep things light and fresh. And my brothers, in return, we would be doing that, quote, movie lines at dinner. And my poor mom just put up with it all and still has to this day. So a lot of fun, but I just enjoyed humor and really, really enjoy, smiling and laughing. It's just something I'm happy of.
When you're a kid, who is your favorite of, like, in terms of the movie world, favorite movie, favorite comedian, the lines that you and your brothers can't stop telling each other?
Yeah, I think early on, guys like Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder, like doing movies like Stir Crazy and See No Evil, Hear No Evil, which to me is like just an absolutely brilliant piece of work done. And then as I went along, guys like Aykroyd and Chevy Chase, and then I really got into SNL and watching SNL, and then my guy, Chris Farley. I was a very animated, when I was younger, I was doing the van down by the river and breaking things, and like, as your father probably told you, my name is Matt Foley, and I am a motivational speaker. Before
Excellent.
We get started, so let me tell you something of what I'm all about. I am 38 years old, I am divorced, and I live in a van down by the river. So I got into him and then just stuck with it. Yeah.
And you do an amazing Harry Carey.
Yes.
Thanks.
It is, there are so many, people... I look at like Elvis impersonators and Harry Carey impersonators. They are like priests in a church to a higher God. That's kind of what they are doing. And there are so many people out there who try to do Harry, and God bless them, they just don't exactly hit it right, because the most important thing about Harry is the befuddlement of it. It isn't really what he's saying. It's the intent of what he's trying to say, right? And you catch that perfectly.
Yeah, that's the one thing. I said, people like, he doesn't sound like him, or it doesn't. Well, yeah, I can't nail that. I've found a few people that are pretty good, but that's hard to imitate to perfection to Harry Carey. And I understand that. And I like to say, do exactly what you say, is find the stories about him and understand how he was calling a game. Like, I would watch games all the time. This isn't just made up out of thin air. I'm not, and him just talking an entire inning about nothing to do with the game at all. Like, you know, top half of the first inning here. And I was at the, down at the grocery store today, and I was sitting there and I was picking out some oranges and some cantaloupes, and it popped in my head that I had a prostate exam on Tuesday. Oh, and God. I was like, the Cubs are playing Tuesday. I'm going to have to change that appointment. Ground ball over to first, onto the pitcher, two away. He just had the ability to just roll that through all the time. Yes. So he was really incredible.
That's really, and you know, and I watch guys do this, you know, watching baseball is, and like ESPN and stuff, there's a lot of mechanic to what they're doing, right? Because they've got all these bells and whistles too. They're showing all kinds of graphics, and they can fill. But back in the day, these guys were just doing talk shows, and there was a baseball game going on in the background, especially if you had a crap product on the field,
right?
And you had to figure out how to make it entertaining. And it's the one great thing that Harry brought to Chicago, because there were many years when he started with the Cubs in 1980, there were many years that really were not good.
No.
Right? And yep. He had to find a way to get us through all of that.
Yeah, and he's telling stories because of that. Like, what are you going to do? Break down the game when it's 14-1 and you're
right,
losing in the seventh and the mop-up pitcher's coming in? You have to find ways to keep the fan entertained. And I think that's one thing that he really had, was that relationship with the fans. You'd hear all the stories about
sure,
all the times going to the bars,
wow,
and doing these things. I read his ledgers. So Grant over at Harry Carey showed me his ledgers from, I think it was 1971, 72.
It's we have it in the office.
Yeah.
He gave it
right,
to all
that,
the investors. So I should point out that I am
one.
So
yes. You got to hit the bell, too, if you want. So yeah.
There you go.
Because when we talk about this, I do need to make that clear. But it is, he gave out this, it's Harry's date book from 1973, I think, or whatever year that was. And you know what it was for? It was for the IRS. It's true.
Of course it was.
So he would go through who he had dinner with or drinks with, and he would write down all of the totals of the money so he could hand it in, because he was, you know, it was entertaining. And back then you could write that stuff off at 100%. So he would do, and it was this, it's like, it's insane. Like Ronald Reagan is in it. I mean, he was meeting
people.
And he
wasn't making it up.
I don't think.
That's one heck of a ruse if he was going that far.
Yeah,
I mean,
right?
Wilt Chamberlain and him back-to-back nights were partying somewhere, I think, in L.A.,
oh,
and it was
great,
just like having beers together, and it's like, you're like you said, presidents and managers and all these, you know, me and Casey Stengel, it's like, holy cow, you know.
My favorite thing is he would tell stories, especially when they put a bunch of people in the booth with him, he would tell stories about going out with the umpires, right? They go to Eli's for steak, right, on Chicago Avenue, and they would sit there, and he'd be, you know, Harry Wendelstead and I were having, you're stopping, you're thinking, my God, what goes on there in those conversations with those umpires about, you know, blown calls and you know, looking at the girls in the stands, because you know that's really what the conversation was about, and the romance of baseball is about that. I kind of miss that a little bit.
Yeah, me too. I do. I miss the conversations that people have when you talk about, like, the umpires and players. Like, there's this huge dissension right now for some reason, and, you know, talking about robot umpires and all these different things. But, like, the human element is so fun, and having that conversation during a pitching change with an umpire about his day, and, like, instead it's on the defensive. Like, what was that? What did you say to me? It's like, no, I was just asking, how's the kids doing? Remember, he was like this big. You brought him around the field.
Yeah.
You know, and
the whole culture's kind of turned into that, you know, where everybody's on the defense. Is like, you're going to say something to me, and you're going to have to put me on edge. And that the why we play these games, why we so enjoy these games, why we broadcast these games is to enjoy ourselves. And I love when there's a human moment between and especially in baseball, because there's so much downtime. Right?
Mm-hmm.
There's so much, especially during a pitching change or whatever it happens to be. You see guys, I love it when the first baseman and the guy on first are sitting there jawing at each other.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
They look like they're having a good time.
Right? I mean, that's why Slapshot may be the greatest sports movie of all times. I know I'm changing sports here, mm-hmm, but it's like what these guys are talking about when they're on, you know, out on the ice.
Yep.
Right? I mean, that's all true.
No, 100%. The conversations that we'd have in the dugout, I always find that funny. When you talk about, you know, those moments where you're having conversations, you know, everybody's thinking you're talking about one thing. And they're not even in the right ballpark for that. It's something completely, totally different.
Right.
You know, and what it does is, because you're 162 games in 187 days, you're playing every day. It's different than other sports. In football, that's hard to do. It's hard to, you're go for 60 minutes once a week. In baseball, I remember being in Houston at the Astrodome and telling jokes at the end of the dugout. We were losing 16-4. And just sitting there just telling jokes. Like,
what else are you going to do?
Yeah, we were bored. And then our manager after the game let us know that that wasn't the best thing to do. Jim Leland let us know that you don't do that. You know, we respect the game in the nicest way by telling us he was going to go into his office and have his cigar and a drink. And when he came out of his office, if there was any one of us in the locker room, he was going to call the cops.
Ooh.
And he was going to have us arrested for impersonating Major League Baseball players.
He let you know. But doesn't that keep you loose? Isn't that maybe part of your success, too? That you got to do something when things are tense to sort of chill out a little
bit? Yeah, 100%. I think you perform your best in anything when you're relaxed. You need some, I don't know, anxiety is not the right word. You need some adrenaline because that's excitement, getting ready for a game. But at the same time, if I'm like super tight, I'm not going to do my best job. So if you're relaxed and having fun, and when you're winning, everyone's like, look at those guys.
They're having
so much fun. And when you're losing, they go, ah, they're not taking anything seriously. You know, so it's a tough line to balance.
It is.
There is nothing more fun for me than to watch a Cubs game as a kid and they're on the West Coast or playing in San Francisco, let's say, and it's like 40 degrees on a San Francisco night in the middle of July. And these guys are all bundled up and there's nobody in the stands, and some team is losing 14-0, and it is just, and they got to just make, and it's in the seventh inning, and they got to get through the next three innings, right? And just say something, make something interesting, and find a storyline to talk about. And watching these guys all bundled up in the dugouts and trying to come up with a way to entertain themselves, I think that's to me, that's what baseball is all about. Because you can have, in October, it's totally different. It's fun. 100%. It's really about, but getting through to July and August in some moments where it didn't count, right? It doesn't mean anything. All right, Ryan Dempster, go see him. This is going to be great. August. This is Saturday night at the Vic, which is such a fun place to put on a show. It's a just don't go. Yeah, have you been backstage at the Vic?
I have, and downstairs.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
That is something. Tell stories about that. VicTheater.com is where you get the tickets for this. This is an amazing thing. This is for a school sports program for the Chicago Public Schools. It's going to be Demp along with Anthony Rizzo, Carrie Wood, Ozzie Guillen, and more. And the proceeds are going to go to CPS Score. It's a 501c3 donation to the Chicago Children's Fund. Because this is for after-school programs, so the kids get off the streets. They're involved in sports and stuff like that. We all know how important that is. There's no question about that. So go see them Saturday night at the Vic. Show starts at 7 o'clock. Doors open at 6 o'clock. The drinks run freely and often at the Vic, so take advantage of that.
And at a party by Dempster. So
yeah,
most parties I have, that's it's going to be a fun night. We're really excited for it. It's been a while coming and putting it all together, and it's coming to fruition. And the guys are really excited. The guests, like, I look at it like you're going to come to a show, you're going to help out some kids who could really use it and get an opportunity to play sports that never get to play sports.
Yeah.
Yep.
And all the while, I promise you, there's going to be a ton of laughs.
Yes, I know there will be.
I know there will be,
a lot of surprises. We got a great opportunity. The fan involvement will be amazing, and really looking forward to doing this Saturday night at the Vic.
That's cool that you're doing it, Ryan. So
thank you.
Thank you for what you're doing for Chicago.
Thank you for being here, my friend. Appreciate it, as always. Let's check in right now. We've got Don Kleppen's got the WGN headlines coming up at the top of the hour.
Yes, sir. The mother of, a Chicago mother, rather, has a plea for her son who was shot and killed.
Violetta?